Happy anniversary. Pour a cheerful toast and fill it. Happy anniversary. But be careful you don't spill it. Happy anniversary. Oh, happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary.
Can you imagine what kind of movie director Vince McMahon would make? Normally in a movie, you pay off the story in the end. So, you know, even if it's predictable, you do it because you want to please the audience so more people will pay to go see it and will want to see your movies in the future. Vince would direct the next Twilight film and proceed to kill off all the main characters in the first 20 minutes because the people who read the books already know how it's supposed to end. So you see, we need to swerve them and prove that they don't know shit. He would direct The Dark Knight Rises, kill off Batman in the opening scene, and just replace him with Aquaman for the rest of the movie and say, "See? Bet you didn't see that one coming." I'm just waiting now for John Cena to kidnap Laurinaitis, wheel him to the ring, and put a gun to Johnny's head, only instead of a little flag popping out that says Bang 316, it shoots rainbows and Ovaltine. You see, the thing with Nash is that he was the product of lucky sperm. That's it. Let me school you, son. When a guy like The Undertaker comes down to the ring, I mean, you have to show him at least some level of respect. I don't care if you're not an Undertaker fan. There were people online saying, "I don't like The Undertaker anyway, so why is it okay to want other people but not Undertaker?" It's not okay to want other people.
What?
Heel or face, it's a stupid bullshit chant, and you're a stupid person if you think that it's a fun thing to go to the show and interrupt a promo by saying what?
What?
I mean, you want to see a Willow impression? Here's my Willow impression.
Willow is being beaten down by the metal object because Willow sucks!
This gimmick sucks. I had a thought that nobody else has brought up. What about TNA at medieval times? They have one out in New Jersey, not far from here. I went when I was a kid. They could have Magnus ride in on a horse and joust for the title with Samoa Joe. Oh, that poor horse.
Kind of screwed. They gotta pull someone else out of their ass.
Austin's gonna be 48 years old, I believe, next year. If he isn't already, he'll be 48 next
48?
Year.
48?
48 years old.
48?
He's claimed.
Are you sure 48?
It's 48. If he's not 48 now, he will be next year.
Really?
Wow.
And
wow.
The reality, I believe 48.
Can we ask Siri?
Ask Siri. He's checking his iPhone.
Oh, good
right
luck
now.
With that.
And today I'm here to tell you, I think Hulk Hogan has definitely been that rocket fuel that TNA needed.
Lawler gives Lance Russell credit for getting him into wrestling in the first place. He's told that story a whole bunch of times. Lawler wanted Russell to induct him into the Hall of Fame back in 2007, but it was supposedly Kevin Dunn who said, "Nobody's going to know who he is. I have an idea. Let's get William Shatner to do the induction. He's a celebrity. People will know who he is. He's still on TV doing Priceline commercials, you dumb shit." It's almost like they have this thing in their brain, like, we're in New York City, and so all New York City people love street fights, and they love weapons. I've lived in New York my entire life. Guess what? I like a perfectly good, normal wrestling match every now and then. Let me school you, son. I don't walk down the street when I go to work every single day, and I wake up in the morning, and the first thing I do when I get off the bus is I pull out my kendo stick, and I beat the shit out of the bus driver with the kendo stick. And then I go into my office building, and I see the doorman, and I go, "Hey," and I throw a trash can at his face. That's not how life is here in New York. Apparently, TNA has a completely different concept of how New York City works than the rest of us do.
Boom!
I never expected to still be doing this show 7 years later. 7 years is a big deal for me, and I thank all of you for that. The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client! Brock Lesnar conquered the streak!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Welcome to the 7 year anniversary show, episode 353 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, November 9th, 2014. I am the Solid Monster. And a big thank you to everybody listening to this podcast right now. 7 years of episodes. I think somebody on Twitter tallied up, like they give an approximation of the minutes, over like 43,000 minutes or something like that of me sounding off over the years. It's pretty incredible stuff, and I want to just thank everybody for being a part of it. A lot of you guys are new, but I also got a lot of you guys who have been there from day one. Loyal, longtime Sound Off listeners who have made this possible. So thank you very much. This is really cool. And we're going to have a good show this week. First, got some business we got to get out of the way, starting with Audible. Audible.com offering their free 30-day trial. You can use our custom URL, audibletrial.com/solomonster, to get your free audiobook. You get to pick one that you get to keep no matter what, but you are going to have 30 days to sample the service. Check out the different books they offer. They have books from all walks of life, including wrestling books. And, you know, one book that I would recommend, and I know at least one of you have picked it up using our trial, is The Squared Circle, Life, Death, and Professional Wrestling by David Shoemaker, a.k.a. The Masked Man, on Twitter. I've heard good things about that book. You can get that audiobook through Audible, and you can use our custom URL to do so, audibletrial.com/solomonster, and just type in the name of the book or type in David Shoemaker's name. It'll come right up. I think it's over like 10 hours of audio, something crazy like that, and you can get that for free. So take advantage of the offer. Use our custom URL. Every time somebody signs up, the show gets a little something for it. It's a win-win situation, so check it out, audibletrial.com/solomonster. Also got some PayPal shout-outs for people who have donated to the show this week. We have Hytham the Equalizer Al-Nawasser, who has been a big supporter of the podcast, so thank you to Hytham. Playboy Tiago Lorero and Luis Goldmine Gauthier. And I hope I'm pronouncing that right, because it's either Gauthier or Gauthier. Gauthier sounds a lot more highfalutin to me. I think probably a blue-collar guy, Luis. I'm thinking it's Gauthier, but if I'm incorrect, I apologize. But there you go. Those are your PayPal shout-outs for this week. If you want to contribute to the show, you can do so on thesolomonster.com. There is a PayPal donation box on the right-hand side. This is, of course, a free podcast, but if you want to make a donation, that's the place to do it. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. This has been a good year for us. A lot of people, again, of their own will, voluntarily making donations to the show. And you guys know who you are. I know who you are because I have your names on a list. And I say thank you to each and every one of you, because that's something you go and do on your own voluntarily. You don't have to do it, but you do. And just know that I appreciate it. And last but not least here, before we move on, got to mention our store, ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster sounds off. You got to type in the full name of the podcast. That'll take you directly to our Pro Wrestling Tees store. We've got 10 different designs up in the store right now, so certainly there'll be at least one shirt in there I am sure that you will like. All kinds of sizes and colors, and they ship internationally, so no matter where you are in the world, we have a lot of UK listeners, it will ship to you. We've had UK people send me photos of their shirts when they've gotten them, and you can pay via PayPal, credit card, debit card. It's not just PayPal anymore. So ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster sounds off. And also, if you guys have ideas for t-shirt designs, things you may want to see in the future, email me and let me know. You know, we're always open to different suggestions. We've got some ideas of our own for new shirts in the next couple of months, but if you've got some ideas, by all means, let me know. Also, one last thing while I'm in the mode of thanking you guys, for your support, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that we passed 10,000 subscribers this week on YouTube. I was hoping that we would do that before the anniversary show. We did. We've actually blown past 10,000 subscribers. If you are not one of them, head over there right now, youtube.com/thesolomonster. Hit the subscribe button, because every time a new video, a new Sound Off Extra, a new Sound Off Inbox, whatever it may be, goes up, you will be alerted. And there is a ton of bonus content at different times that does go up. I'm in the middle of reading Chris Jericho's book right now. When I'm done, I'm planning on doing a review of that book, which should be in the next few weeks. That's the sort of thing that you can look forward to on our YouTube channel. And thank you for helping me blow past 10,000 subscribers. Now we move on to 11,000. Let's start out with WWE. Got to talk about SmackDown. That was a big news story this week. SmackDown is officially moving to Thursdays at 8 p.m. beginning on January 15th. It was made official in an article on Variety.com. They had quotes from Sci-Fi management. They had quotes from WWE management. So this is not a rumor any longer. This is a reality. Now, with SmackDown moving back to Thursdays, which they never should have moved from Thursdays in the first place back in the day. Thursday probably is a much better night than Friday is, although you wonder. I mean, there are times when SmackDown would go live on Tuesdays, and it's not like SmackDown Live on Tuesdays did much better than it's been doing on Fridays. It's been established in that slot for so long, there may be an adjustment, kind of like when Impact moved to Wednesdays. They've gotten most of that audience back. They still haven't quite gotten all of those viewers back. So there'll be an adjustment period. But how this affects the other shows, NXT. NXT is pushed to the WWE Network on Thursdays at 4 o'clock and then on demand. That will be changing. NXT will no longer be airing on Thursdays. It will now be moving to Wednesdays on the WWE Network. You could say in competition with Impact and Lucha Underground. I guess technically that's the case. It depends. I mean, if NXT pushes to the network and its first airing is at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it's not really in competition necessarily if it's just on demand after that. But NXT is moving to Wednesdays, and here's the other key bit that some people may not be aware of, including our Canadian listeners. In Canada, starting on January 14th, which is the day before it debuts on Thursdays here in this country, SmackDown is moving to Wednesday nights in Canada on Sportsnet 360. So the Canadian fans are going to be getting SmackDown a day before the rest of us here in the States. So it's a little role reversal because, you know, here in the U.S., we're used to getting these shows, whether it's a day, a week, a few days before other markets sometimes do internationally. Well, here the roles are reversed, and the Canadians are going to be the first people to watch SmackDown each week. So those are the changes that are being made. I think it's for the better. Am I going to watch SmackDown more often? Probably not. And that has nothing to do with the time slot. It just has everything to do with the fact that SmackDown is a useless show. And you may get some really good wrestling on that show. In fact, I'm sure that on a week-to-week basis, SmackDown, from a quality standpoint, may well be a better show and a more enjoyable show than Raw. I mean, look, Raw's 3 hours long. That's way too long. SmackDown is 2 hours. Okay, that's more normal. Raw, you have these rapid-fire segments, a lot of three-minute matches. You can get that on SmackDown. I'm willing to bet that, generally speaking, the matches have more time on SmackDown, which, again, is weird because it's an hour less than Raw, and yet more often than not, it feels like they're rushing through things on Raw. I mean, you'll get some long matches on Raw, but the fact is, it's a useless show. There is nothing about SmackDown that is must-see. There is nothing about SmackDown where if you miss something that happens, you have no idea what's going on. You know, you have to go back and watch what happened, or you miss a key part of a story development, or a key match that you can't find anywhere else. We see the same matches on SmackDown every single week that we see on Raw. SmackDown is Raw rematches, sometimes Raw SmackDown rematches, and this is the cycle that we go through every single week. So I'm not saying it's a bad show, but it's a useless show. There is no need for SmackDown in 2014. So my habits won't change. WWE is probably hoping that other people's habits will change and they'll be able to boost the audience. I hope that's the case. I do want to mention one thing about SmackDown from this week. I haven't watched the full show yet, but I did check out the segment with Sergeant Dan Rose, who was paralyzed from the chest down in Afghanistan many years ago. They brought him out. I think this was in celebration of Veterans Day, which is coming up this week. And so they featured him in a segment on SmackDown. And they had him walk. He actually walked. Again, he was paralyzed from the chest down many years ago. He was walking on the show using this thing called an exosuit. I mean, you have to see it. They kind of explain what it is and how it works. It's an amazing thing to watch. I thought that segment was just fantastic. It was really, really well done, very classy. The crowd is chanting USA, thank you, Dan. I mean, it was just a really touching segment, you know, just to actually not just, yeah, they have veterans out there all the time. WWE does a good job celebrating the veterans and all the shows they've done in the past from Iraq and the tribute to the troops every year. But this segment was different. It was really... really classy. So if you missed it, it's worth watching. I think you can. It's like a 3-minute segment. You can just find it on WWE's YouTube channel. They have highlights of it. Very well done. What's not classy is the way that WWE handled the launch of its network in the UK this past week. I think there's a lot of you guys still very upset about how that whole thing went down. So what happened is the network was finally, after much delay, supposed to launch in the UK this past Monday. I sent a tweet out during the day saying, hey, UK fans, if you get the network, let me know how it is. Let me know your thoughts. And I had this deluge of people sending me tweets saying, it hasn't launched yet. It's going to launch at like 8 o'clock. I forgot about the time zone difference, you know, between the US and the UK. And then maybe an hour after that, I start seeing messages from very disgruntled UK fans saying, this is ridiculous, how could WWE do this, they don't know what they're doing. And I, you know, in my head I'm like, alright, it probably launched, it's not working, there's glitches, there's probably a lot of traffic. I mean, that's what happened when they launched it here in this country. And then I come to find out that the whole network isn't launching at all. And the whole thing has been delayed, and all WWE did was 20 minutes before the network was scheduled to launch, they posted a single tweet on their account saying that the network launch was, what was the word that they used? Indefinitely delayed. They didn't even give a reason. They just said, it's been delayed. No apology, no explanation for why. 20 minutes before the thing was supposed to launch. I mean, that's like an LOL TNA level move there. If TNA were launching a network, that's the sort of thing I would expect from them. And we could talk about WWE creative and all the dumb shit that they've been doing and the mistakes that they've been making. The one area that you usually don't have to complain about is when it comes to the business side of things. They, generally speaking, have their heads on straight. They know what they're doing. Okay, they've been successful all these years, not because of lack of organization. That's one thing that TNA and other companies don't have that you could at least say WWE does. And then you hear about something like this, and you just shake your head. Now, we still have no idea what happened. There's been a lot of reports and rumors that Sky got involved at the last minute. They didn't want the network to launch. And, you know, WWE offering Survivor Series for free, which was not the long-term plan. This was a gimmick that they came up with to try to drive network subscriptions. And remember, earlier this year, they signed a brand new television deal with Sky. And pay-per-views are a big part of that, and people in the UK still have to pay for the pay-per-views. So if you're Sky, all of a sudden you find out that WWE is not only launching this new network in the UK, but they're offering a pay-per-view for free. You can understand why Sky might be upset about that. Is that the reason why this happened? I don't know. We don't know. Sky has denied it, but it's interesting. You know, in the statements that Sky reps have put out when people email them, some people have gotten response from Sky representatives. There was one rep who seemed to speak out of turn and indicated that they are in discussions for a potential channel with WWE. It sounds like it would be something similar to the model they have right now with Rogers up in Canada, which a lot of people are not very happy about. And plus, Rogers only covers about 20% of the Canadian market. A lot of people up in Canada who still don't even have access to the network, although I think Rogers claims it will be offering the network to other providers. Yeah, right. Okay, we'll see. But generally speaking, I asked you guys in the UK, how would you feel about that? And the response was overwhelmingly negative. A lot of negative sentiment about Sky, things being too expensive as it is, they suck, if it was an actual channel, I'm not signing up for it. A lot of negativity to that idea. People want this channel to be this over-the-top model that it is here in the States and the on-demand content and everything else. That's how it was supposed to launch, and then 20 minutes, they pulled it. So are they in discussions with Sky about launching an actual channel? Maybe. Is Sky involved in this at all? They deny it, but what I was going to say is in their responses, not one time have I seen Sky say, we have absolutely nothing to do with this, like put an absolute stamp of approval on this thing. They've made comments like, it wasn't our decision for WWE to, you know, pull the launch at the last minute. It seems like their language has been measured. If you really kind of parse the words and read between the lines here, Sky hasn't exactly denied total involvement in this whole thing. So my gut tells me that whatever happened at the last minute, it was probably a WWE call. And they probably are in discussions for an actual channel. They still have not come out and told us when we can expect this thing to launch. I mean, it could launch in a week. It could launch in 3 months. They had Vince McMahon tape an apology that they've been airing in the UK market. That's all well and good. Whatever level of involvement Sky may or may not have here, the way I look at it is this. This is on WWE. You cannot allow something like this to happen. I mean, this is embarrassing. This is minor league Mickey Mouse level bullshit. If I were a UK fan, I'd be just as pissed off. So this is on them. And you know what? Vince should apologize, but he's got to do more than just apologize here. And they need this thing to work, and the UK is one of their biggest markets, and this is a huge black eye for WWE. Just minor league level bullshit from them this week that whatever the circumstances are, at the end of the day, it's their responsibility. You know, they don't have all of their ducks in a row. How do you allow something like that to happen? How do you put yourself in a position where that could even possibly happen at the last minute? Guess what? It did. And that's not Sky's fault. That's WWE's fault. So that whole thing this week was just a complete disaster. And we'll see. I guess we'll see how negotiations go, what form this network will actually take. And if you're a UK fan, you have every right to be upset because this thing went global on August 12th. Now, it went 170 different countries in mid-August, not the UK. And we found out October 1st. Well, October 1st came and went. No network. Then it's November 1st. November 1st comes and goes. No network. November 3rd, I'm sorry. No network. So I think people have a right to be upset. And it's just embarrassing. That's the only word I can come up with for it. Let's talk about Raw from this past Monday night. Raw was live from Buffalo, New York. You know, it's funny. I can't hear the word Buffalo without thinking about Tatanka. I mean, that's what it's like to be a WWE fan from back in the day. I hear Buffalo, I think of Tatanka. Some of you may not get that joke, but I think a lot of you probably will. Now, Raw for Monday night was missing one important ingredient, and that ingredient was John Cena. John Cena was nowhere to be found on Raw. He was apparently off on the West Coast filming a guest spot on the NBC show Parks and Recreation. He will be back on Raw. We've been assured that John Cena returns on Raw live in the UK this Monday night. And I have to say, not having John Cena on the show was refreshing. I'm not saying he should be off every single week, but to me it illustrates that these guys, these top guys, do not need to be on the show every single week. Now, Brock Lesnar, it would be nice if he actually was on the show more than just once every 4 months. I still think it is incredibly, unbelievably dumb that WWE has not at least come up with this idea to tape some shit with Brock Lesnar. Fly down to where he lives. You don't even have to go to his home. If he doesn't want to welcome you into his home, come up with a fake home. How many times have we seen Randy Orton's fake wives on television, okay? You know, or fake houses when Triple H broke into Randy Orton's home and he had all those people in his home. Remember at 11 o'clock at night? I'm like, what is this guy, running a fucking brothel? You think that was Randy Orton's house? Of course not. There's any number of things you could be doing with Brock. And by the way, I don't buy that bullshit that Brock would be against the idea of sending a camera crew to his home. Brock Lesnar did a UFC fight special many years ago where he welcomed cameras into his home in Minnesota. And they followed him around and they followed him to the gym. Okay, I'm sure he would be more than willing to do something like that if you went to him and said, look, this is what we want to do. Just so you get some footage of him, whether it's training, whether it's him sitting on his couch with a big moose head over his his head, laughing and yucking it up with the title sitting on the couch next to him, you know, nestled by the pillow, just to piss everybody off, like, hey, how's it going, everybody? I'm the champion. I don't have to be there, you know. Hey, have a nice day. I mean, there's any number of things they could be doing just to get this guy some FaceTime, to get him more over as a heel. Got a lot of pissed off fans out there that Brock Lesnar never shows up on TV. That's good for heel heat. It'd be so much better if we actually saw him and saw that smiling, smug face of his. Or maybe you do follow him around. Again, go film him in a steakhouse somewhere, having a big T-bone. Living the life. Let Paul Heyman do the talking for him. I mean, there's any number of things they could be doing. And boy, have they dropped the ball on this thing or not? I mean, I don't even blame Brock. That's up to them. They're supposed to be the creative ones. They have a creative team. They have a team of people called Creative, where their whole job is to come up with compelling storylines and just shit that, generally speaking, is entertaining. Where are they? Is nobody coming up with any of these ideas? This is not rocket science. Isn't that what Brock said once in a promo that before his match with Cena? This ain't rocket science, people. This is simple shit. And they're not doing it. And so this was a week without Cena and, of course, without Brock. And you have Roman Reigns out. He's hurt. Where they really were lacking people. And you really felt the lack of depth on the roster right now because there were so many people working double duty, including Sheamus and Rusev. And I'll get to them in a second. But nonetheless, not having Cena on the show refreshing. I'd like to see that more often. I think of all the people in WWE, the one guy who is completely and utterly overexposed for years has been John Cena. And a big part of that is he's on the show every single week. I mean, why do you think back in the day, guys like Hogan and Savage and Bret and everybody else, I don't remember people saying, oh, these guys are overexposed. I mean, people got tired of Hogan's shtick after a while. They kind of turned on him. But I don't think it was because he was overexposed week to week on television. Television was different back then. You know, you didn't have Raw until 93. Hogan would rarely, if ever, appear, let alone wrestle on a show like Superstars. But when he did, you knew something big was happening. You know, he was probably going to be on the Brother Love show, getting his ass kicked by the Big Boss Man in a big beat-down angle. Or if he was going to have a match, it was a big deal. It felt special. Now, you can't go back to the way things were in 1989. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is, when you've got your top guys, you should be protecting them. And a guy like Cena, you're not protecting him by throwing him out there every single week and throwing him to the wolves in front of crowds that 95% of the time want this guy's head on a platter. So, you know, it may be funny for me to be sitting here saying that WWE is not doing the best job they could be doing of protecting John Cena, of all people. Some people may scoff and laugh at me, but when you really think about it, it's true. In that way, okay, in that way, I'm not saying in booking, but in that way, they're really not protecting John Cena. And they haven't been for years because he's so overexposed. He's on every single show, and some weeks he's on SmackDown, too. So it's okay every now and then to take a guy like him off the show for a week. Maybe two, you know, unless he's hurt. I wouldn't go beyond that because you need him on the show. You do need him. I'm not a fan of how they always book him. I'm not a fan of some of his goofy promos, but I'm not saying get him off the show completely. But it was nice. It was nice not having him on the show this week. Show open with Vince McMahon coming out. He was jumping for joy. He looked really happy to finally be back out in front of the camera. He hasn't been on Raw in many, many, many months. So he came out with the Authority. So technically, this keeps the Authority streak of opening Raw segments alive. I don't even know how many they've had this year, but I know it's a ridiculously high number. So he comes out. He starts plugging the network. Of course, that's why he was on the show. He's talking about the month of November is free, free, free. That's their new hashtag. Free, free, free. You got the Survivor Series for free. You know, did you know that the WWE Network is free all month long? Except for schmucks like me who already pay for it. But for everybody else, it's free. And he made a big announcement. It was not just a network plug. He did announce that at the Survivor Series, wouldn't it be something if the Team Cena vs. Team Authority main event had a stipulation, because Vince is a guy that, you know, he loves having things on the line. He brought up when the government was against him and Ted Turner would, I wanted to just, you know, stick my finger in my mouth and induce my gag reflex when he brought Ted Turner's name up again. This narrative that he's been peddling for years as though it was some blood feud between him and Ted Turner. In his mind, in his head, it was a blood feud against Ted Turner. And he says, you know, there should be something on the line here. We got to raise the stakes. And so the new stipulation for the main event at Survivor Series is that if Team Authority loses, the Authority is no more. What does that mean? I don't know. Because presumably Triple H would still be the COO. Stephanie would still be whatever the hell her title is these days. So I'm not really sure what changes, but hey, it sounds good, right? I mean, look, this Authority storyline has been going on for over a year now. If you really think about it, it was last summer when it started. How many times has Raw opened with an Authority promo? Too many. It's time to wind this thing down and move on from all the best for business bullshit. Is this a sign they may be revisiting that storyline that was rumored earlier this year for WrestleMania that would have had Steve Austin representing Vince McMahon in a match against Triple H for control of the company? Maybe. Maybe it is. Not with Austin, they wouldn't be doing it, but I could see a Rock-Triple H match with Rock representing Vince. I could see that. Or they could just kill the whole thing off at Survivor Series, like they did with the Invasion storyline all those years ago, when they killed that thing off at Survivor Series. You know, I'd rather they just be done with it now, but if they have a long-term plan, that's fine. Just stick with it this time. I never felt like there was an end game with this authority stuff after Bryan won the title at WrestleMania. It just kind of went on and on and on. And even the best of angles can overstay its welcome. I give you Exhibit A with the NWO. And guess what? This ain't the NWO. So the time is right to end this authority nonsense. If they have a long-term plan where it culminates at WrestleMania, fine. But we got to wind this shit down. I love also how they keep talking about how revered the Survivor Series is and how it's WWE's second longest running pay-per-view, which is true, it is. But it's like, yeah, it's so revered that Vince almost canceled it 1 year. And they did. I mean, look, technically he did cancel it because I remember they put that schedule out, I think it was in 2010, and for the month of November they had TBA to be announced. So at one point he had made the decision, that's it. Survivor Series is done, because it had performed so poorly the year before. That was the year after they had built their main event around comedy involving Hornswoggle. And they couldn't figure out why nobody was buying the show anymore. Now, here they are, giving it away for free. Yes, what a revered show Survivor Series is. We had Ambrose and Cesaro. Cesaro had his head busted open hard way. We actually had more color on this show than we have had, I think, on every Raw combined for the last year. We had blood in the opening match. We had blood in the main event, or after the main event. Bray Wyatt sat on stage in his rocking chair watching the match. Cesaro at one point busted out. I give him praise for it every single week. I sound like a broken record, but his uppercut is one of the few moves I still yell out loud for when he nails it. I always pop huge for that move. Ambrose won with the Dirty Deeds, and then he went for Wyatt. The lights went out, came back on, and Wyatt was gone. The chair was still rocking back and forth. I said earlier I didn't see all of SmackDown, but I heard the Ambrose-Wyatt stuff was better on that show than it was on Monday. I hope so, because I'm not really that into this so far. I think it'll end up being awesome. I think their match at Survivor Series should be great. I'm just not feeling it yet. We had Triple H backstage with Stephanie McMahon, and they're kind of talking about what are we going to do? You know, our jobs are on the line here. We've really got to come up with a powerful team for Survivor Series. And Triple H is ready to call on Randy Orton. And Stephanie says, wait a minute, I don't think that's such a good idea. And Triple H wants to call on Orton. Stephanie doesn't want him to. I have to say this. The storytelling on this show with the main storyline this week, that being the authority, having to come up with the team and the stuff with Orton, and then everything that happened at the end, I thought the storytelling was really good. I thought they told a great story with Triple H wanting Orton, Stephanie not. Like I said, what happened at the end and the reluctance on Triple H's face when Stephanie said finish him and Triple H didn't want to, but then he's like, okay, go ahead and finish him. I actually thought the storytelling, as far as that goes, on this show this week was great. Miz beat Jimmy Uso in a match where Damian Mizdow was once again the star. And on commentary, Michael Cole is now instructed to talk about how hilarious Mizdow is. At one point he said, look, this is hysterical. That is the absolute worst possible thing you could do. It's like listening to a cool song and then your parents hear it and they think it's cool. And at that point, it ain't cool anymore. It's just lame. That's exactly how it is here. Do not have Michael Cole laughing at Mizdow. Fake laughing at that. That's the quickest way to kill this gimmick dead. Sheamus, who was advertised for a U.S. title defense after Raw on the network, wrestled Tyson Kidd in a non-title match. The match was completely pointless because not only was Sheamus wrestling Rusev after the show, he lost to Tyson Kidd. Tyson beat him by countout. He put his wife, Natalya, in the way when Sheamus went to attack him outside. Sheamus hesitated. This allowed Tyson to slide back in just in the nick of time. So Tyson Kidd has earned himself a shot at the U.S. title, right? I mean, most normal people would probably surmise that from this. If you are one of those people who thought that, silly goose is all I can say. Of course not. He did, however, earn himself a brogue kick to the face. He got laid out. So Sheamus ends up losing twice on this night. And Kidd, despite beating the champion, who no longer is the champion, likely ends up with no title shot. I will say, it's a shame they don't give Tyson Kidd promo time on Raw the way they do on NXT and other shows, maybe like Main Event, because he's really entertaining, and if you just watch Raw and you don't watch NXT, and you don't see him on Total Divas, you would have no idea. You would have zero reason to care about this guy. Why would you? He appears on Raw twice a year. He usually loses. Sending him out there cold does not do him any favors. So, you know, I saw him out there against Sheamus. I figured, okay, it doesn't really matter because they're just feeding him to Sheamus anyway. But then he won. And I was even more puzzled when they didn't give him any promo time beforehand. At this point, I busted out my trusty champs or chumps hashtag on Twitter, which I take full credit for. Then I saw that Dolph Ziggler was up next, and my magic eight ball told me exactly what was about to happen. So we had Dolph Ziggler come out, and Triple H came out with the rest of the Authority, and we had Triple H cutting a promo on Dolph. And so what they're trying to do, they know that Ziggler is being recruited by John Cena for his team in Survivor Series. And so they're trying to plant the seeds of doubt in his head. You know what's going to happen. Who's going to take credit if you join Team Cena and you guys win? And Triple H threw some references out there to make all of the insider wrestling fans sweat a little bit about the glass ceiling and all this other stuff. It was actually really good. It was good that Ziggler actually was in this position in the first place and had a chance to retort to Triple H, and he ended up telling Triple H, basically, go fuck off. I want to see you guys lose at Survivor Series so the Authority is no more. That, of course, is not what Triple H wanted to hear. So as punishment, they put Ziggler in an Intercontinental title match right then and there on the spot against Mr. Money in the Bank, Seth Rollins. It was a good match. Ended with Rollins having victory well in hand after a curb stomp, only for Randy Orton to slither into the ring from where else, out of nowhere, and nailed an RKO on Rollins for the DQ. So Dolph loses the match, but not his championship. How many times have I said that this year? We had a backstage segment with Triple H and Randy Orton. It was a very heated exchange. I actually thought the interplay between them and Triple H, really, he was the one who did most of the talking here. His fire, his performance, I thought this was really good. And his whole thing was, look, you want Rollins, right? That's what Randy Orton wanted. He wanted Seth Rollins one-on-one. So Triple H said, you know what? I'll give it to you. So another guy pulling double duty on the show, Seth Rollins, he goes, I'll give you your match with Seth Rollins tonight, but with this caveat, that being, when this is over, you squash your beef. That's the end of it. That's it. And you guys stand united as co-captains of Team Authority at Survivor Series. And they shook on it, and Randy Orton said, that sounds good to me. So we had our main event. We got a wacky Luke Harper promo where he was never identified, but it was obvious it was for him. I mean, they showed his eyeballs all over the screen. He said, I'm going to piece myself back together with pieces of you. Sounds like the lyrics to a boy band song. Ryback beat Titus O'Neil, who got a surprising amount of offense before being shell-shocked and pinned. Not as big of a reaction to the big guy as I predicted last week. The real test, I think, is going to be 2 weeks from now, the week after that. As far as how over this guy can really get after months and months and months of being branded as a failure who couldn't hack it with the top stars. I'm not counting this week's show because they're in the UK and they'll cheer for almost anything not named John Cena because the UK fans are awesome. We had Big Show backstage with Renee Young, who offered his services for Team Cena at Survivor Series, which was hilarious, you know, as though anybody asked him in the first place. Sad thing is, I took that to mean that he probably will get a spot on Team Cena. He then cut an oddly downtrodden, would be a good word to use, promo, like a jilted lover about how he misses his friend, Mark Henry. He's had him in his home to eat dinner, and I've even invited him onto my bus. I mean, holy shit, not his bus. I want my friend back, he says. That's what I kept thinking of those old Sergeant Slaughter promos when the whole Iraq storyline was over and they wanted to turn him back babyface, and he's like, I want my country back. It's like Big Show here. I want my friend back. Or maybe I just want to knock him out of my life. That was how Big Show ended it. So clearly this guy doesn't know what the fuck he wants. Big Show, you know, he got awfully attached to Mark Henry after only a couple of months of teaming. I still can't get over the fact that he had Henry on his bus. I mean, to me, that's huge. I mean, that's like saying I love you on the second date. What exactly happened on that bus would be my question. You know what? Maybe I don't want to know. I don't want to know. So instead of doing the match between them at Survivor Series, we got it on this show instead. The first match, at least, between them. I'm sure they'll do it again at some point. And guess what? It sucked. God, did this match suck. It was slow. It was plodding. It was boring. The crowd did not care one iota about it. JBL said he wasn't sure that the ring could support the weight of these two men. He said this despite the many times that they've teamed together in recent months in the very same ring. Henry hit a World's Strongest Slam on Big Show, who kicked out. Henry knocked him out of the ring, hit him with the ring steps for the DQ, and then delivered a World's Strongest Slam on top of the steps. I've taken more devastating bumps rolling off my bed and onto the floor in a drunken stupor back in my younger days. And by younger days, I mean 4 months ago. Backstage, Eric Rowan played with Renee Young's hair and said, "Pretty. Ooh, you know, me like caveman. You pretty. Me break up from Wyatt family. Me get no push anymore. Me get released. Me sign with TNA." That's usually the pattern here. So it appears that Rowan is the new Festus. Not a good sign. Nikki Bella beat Emma with the rack attack, 2 minutes 24 seconds on the Divas stopwatch, so these matches are actually regressing. We went through a period where I almost did away with the whole Divas stopwatch. I figured, okay, these matches are getting some consistent time now every week, between 4 and 5 minutes. I could live with that. Now, every week, it's like 2.5 minutes, a minute and a half. So Emma continues to be wasted. After the match, Nikki forced her sister, who is her slave, to go up to AJ, who was doing commentary, and slap her, which she did. AJ responded with a hard shove, which we would not have seen without the benefit of a replay, because the director decided that it would be a great time to cut away when AJ attacked Brie. You know, and this is something I've noticed a lot lately, and WWE's production team do a phenomenal job when it comes to their video packages. I mean, they are just second to none. But more and more, I'm noticing these poorly timed cutaways on this show, especially when somebody is about to do a big move. How is it that I'm Joe Blow sitting on my ass at home, and I can tell when a big move is about to happen, but the professionals who do this for a living don't know? How many times did we see that back when Brian was flying around the ring doing his flying knee, the knee that beat John Cena? How many times did the camera cut away to show the people going, "Yes, yes, yes," just as he was hitting the knee on somebody? That wasn't an isolated incident. That wasn't one time. It was happening like every single week. And I feel like we're seeing this more and more often, and I don't know why. So by this point, the show is really dragging. You know, we had Rusev and Zack Ryder, and this right here is why 3 hours is just way too long. There was just no reason to have Sheamus or Rusev pulling double duty on this show if they had a match later on. Ryder tapped to the Accolade, quick match, like a minute long if that. At least the challenger won, even if the champion didn't earlier in the show. By the way, Ryder on Twitter claims he has a torn rotator cuff, and he is not sure if he's going to need surgery or not. The injury may have happened in this match, I'm not sure. Backstage later on, Stephanie approached Rusev and Lana about being on Team Authority at Survivor Series, to which Lana responded, "As they say in your country, we'll get back to you." I think I actually just did a better Russian accent than Lana does. Xavier Woods is coming back. We got a very bizarre vignette of him singing as like a preacher man with a choir in the background. A new day is coming, we were told. Now, I see a lot of people bringing up the racial stereotype of the dancing black man. A lot of very angry people online who were not happy when they saw this. I'm more offended that they're just recycling another gimmick with the guy. Ernest Miller was the first guy I saw doing the James Brown impersonation in WCW. So, you know, it's funny because first they give away the Cat's old theme music. Somebody Call My Mama. That was his. They gave that away. Now they're giving his gimmick to somebody else. I mean, here's the deal. It's a mid-card gimmick for a mid-card guy. At least he'll get some TV time out of it. But then again, I said the exact same thing 3 months ago when he showed up on Raw in a white suit trying to rally Big E and Kofi for his cause, and have that turn out. I have no idea, by the way, if Big E and Kofi are supposed to be part of this act. I mean, it's been 1 week, one promo, so maybe this week they'll air a new one, and maybe they will be involved, maybe they won't be involved. Maybe A New Day is a new name for their non-existent group. I have to give it another week or two before I really decide on this thing. But there were a lot of people very upset about the racial aspect of this. Look, it's WWE. Are you surprised by this? How many dancing black guys have we seen? How many angry black men have we seen? When have they ever really truly taken an African-American superstar, not named The Rock, who some people will still argue with me is not even black, and really done anything with him that stayed completely away from those stereotypes? I mean, Booker T was very successful, but Booker T was another one. He was doing spinneroonies, he was doing breakdancing. I mean, it's just how they do things. I'm not saying it's right, but that's what they do, because they're very simple-minded people. Los Matadores defeated Gold and Stardust when Fernando pinned Stardust with a backstabber. So the champs lose again on this show, without actually losing their titles, of course. Miz and Mizdow were on commentary at ringside. The Matadors got the win. So you would presume that they would be next in line for a shot at the tag team titles, right? Wrong. They immediately announced that the Usos would be getting a tag team title match in a cage on SmackDown. Why? Why not? So, we got the trifecta on this show yet again. Champs are chumps. And, you know, this weekend, New Japan Pro Wrestling headlined its Power Struggle pay-per-view, which I'm hoping to see some of those matches a little bit later on. I'm actually pretty excited to see some of those matches. But they headlined that show with an Intercontinental title match between Shinsuke Nakamura and Katsuyori Shibata. They can do that because they've made that title mean something, so that when the IWGP title, which is the crown jewel in New Japan, is not defended, their Intercontinental title is still a strong enough draw that you could headline with it. So, at a time when Brock Lesnar is MIA, it would be nice if WWE had taken a similar approach with its own Intercontinental title. That's why I created the hashtag champs or chumps in the first place, and I get so frustrated when the champs lose every single week on this show without any sort of follow-up or repercussions. They actually did do a good job with Dolph Ziggler and Cesaro in that it resulted in a 2 out of 3 falls match on the last pay-per-view, and Ziggler won clean in 2 straight falls. So it sucks for Cesaro, but the champ came out looking strong. But that's a rarity these days. You can count on one hand the number of times they've done that right. And there's no way, okay, up to this point, maybe things will change now with Rusev having the U.S. title as strong as he's booked, but there is no way up to now that you could realistically headline a WWE pay-per-view with an Intercontinental or a U.S. title match without being laughed out of the room. And that's the big difference. You should be able to, if need be. And New Japan can, and I think that there's a lesson to be learned from that, but WWE has its own way of doing things. That's part of the reason why they're in the rut they're in right now. It's that apathy from the crowds. That's the worst kind of crowd that you could have. One that just does not care. And I feel like, up to this point, because things can always change, that's exactly what we've had. We've had a crowd that is conditioned not to care because these titles are a joke. They're just something, they're a meaningless prop that these guys drag to the ring with them. And you know what? They may as well leave them in their bag in the back because there's just no point. But it doesn't have to be that way. All right, so I'm off my soapbox now. Let me talk about this main event with Randy Orton and Seth Rollins, because I thought these two guys had a really good match. Not a blowaway match or anything like that. They can save that for a pay-per-view down the road. This was the first time one-on-one between the two of them since this whole storyline started. And it even had a clean finish with the heel going over. And, you know, I guess technically both of them were heels going into the match, but still, when was the last time we saw somebody win clean with a backslide? You know what I mean? And it was a perfectly acceptable finish, you know, to a competitive back-and-forth match. It wasn't like, oh, what a bullshit finish. I didn't see anybody complaining about the finish. It was quite great. It was unpredictable. It came out of nowhere. And for the story they were telling post-match, it made sense. You know, I sure as hell didn't see it coming. So they do this angle where all the authority now are in the ring. Remember what Triple H said? He said, when this match is over, win or lose, you guys are going to squash this and we're going to be as one. So Randy Orton is seething. He is angry. He just looks like he's about to snap. All the authority members, including the Stooges, are in the ring, and he shakes their hand one by one. He shakes Jamie Noble's hand, Joey Mercury, Corporate Kane, comes to Seth Rollins. And Rollins is like, look, dude, I'm sorry. I am sorry for everything. Let's just put this behind us, okay? Let's be one. Let's be co-captains, team authority at Survivor Series. And he puts his hand out. And Orton contemplates this, and he says, I'm sorry, too. And he drops him with an RKO. And you could see it coming from a mile away, but it was still awesome. And the place exploded. This was Randy Orton's official babyface turn. The way they did this, I don't really see how they can straddle the line with him anymore. I still think tweener Randy Orton is the best way to go, where he still, you know, wrestles babyfaces in some matches and wrestles heel guys in other matches. I don't want to see him as a full 100% babyface, and I'm sure he doesn't want to be that either. So if there's a way that they can find to straddle that line, I think it would be best. But you watch this. This was a babyface turn. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. So he's just beating everybody up, and Triple H confronts him and says, listen, you got to calm down, okay? You got to calm down and just stop this. And he calms Orton down. Orton goes to leave. He shoulder checks Triple H. Triple H spins him around, and Orton decks him in the face, just nails him right in the face. Place goes even crazier. Now he's pounding on Triple H, and the authority tackle him. The numbers are just, they're too much. And they drag him outside, and that's where Stephanie said, finish him. And Triple H was very hesitant, because Triple H wanted Orton on Team Authority at the pay-per-view. He gave him every opportunity to calm down, to be rational about things, and he just wouldn't do it. And so reluctantly, Triple H says, all right, finish it. And they lay Orton's down face first on the announce desk. Rollins gives him a curb stomp that busts him open hard way. He immediately starts bleeding from the forehead. So again, the second instance of blood on the show. And beyond the curb stomp on the table, he ended up curb stomping him on the ring steps as well. And then poor Kane took a pratfall. He tripped over, I think it was Orton's leg at one point. So that was kind of funny. But this was a big-time injury angle that will keep Orton out for a while. He's off to film his movie I mentioned last week, The Condemned 2. And I guess he really is off the pay-per-view. And I'm shocked. I mean, he has been the guy for the last several weeks. Everything has been built around Randy Orton and Randy Orton's imminent split from the Authority. He has been the top draw, if you will, on this show. And the people have been into him and all the RKO Vine stuff and everything else. And now you're heading into Survivor Series, which according to them is this revered show. And they're in St. Louis. The guy just turned babyface. He's going to be in St. Louis, his hometown. They're all going to be cheering for Orton. They're going to have Randy Orton signs. And from the looks of it, he will not be on this pay-per-view at all, unless he does a run-in in the end and costs the Authority the match, which actually would make sense. I mean, given what's on the line in this match, if Orton was the one to kind of run out of the crowd and RKO somebody and cost the Authority the match, and then the Authority has to break up, and it was all because of Randy Orton, that would make sense. I suppose it's possible, if he has a break in his schedule, they could fly Orton into St. Louis secretly, and he could do a run-in. But it doesn't look like there will be a Randy Orton match. He will not be part of Team Authority. He will not be part of Team Cena, which I thought would be the most logical place for him. That, to me, is very surprising. But I do have to say that I thought the show-closing angle on the show was fantastic. It was a heavy angle. It was well done. There was no reason for this show to go 3 hours and 15 minutes. I mean, they went until like 11:15 or 11:16 on this show. On a night when they were promising a bonus match on the network when it was over. There was no reason for this show to be that long. Look at all the shit that we had to sit through. Rusev and Zack Ryder, are you fucking kidding me? I mean, how does something like that happen when you have John Cena is missing, not to mention all the other guys who were still out injured, and guys are pulling double duty. You're just trying to get through 3 hours. You have an extra match that you have to wait until the show is over for. And you let this show go 3 hours and 15 minutes? I mean, are you out of your mind? I don't know who made that call. I don't know how something like that happens. But that was bullshit. Now, I stayed up and I watched the Rusev-Sheamus match, and it was a damn good match. I mean, these guys had a really good match. Sheamus never tapped out, but he passed out in the accolade. Rusev won the championship, so he is the new United States champion, perhaps soon to be branded maybe the Russian Federation champion. I would go in that direction. Better yet, somebody online, and I apologize because I don't remember who made the suggestion. It was either on Twitter or on our Facebook page. But somebody made the suggestion, you know, because Lana was talking about we're going to take the U.S. title and we're going to hand it to Vladimir Putin. I think it would be fantastic if they actually did that in storyline and Rusev just shows up on TV this week with no belt. And the story is that they gave it to Putin and Putin took the belt. And now that's how you write the U.S. title off television because we don't need two meaningless secondary titles. I thought that was actually very clever. And I would ordinarily I would endorse that idea. But I have to say, as hard as Rusev has been pushed, it gives me a glimmer of hope that him having that U.S. title could potentially be meaningful for the belt. And maybe it does end up being an important thing if, you know, they're trotting guys out there week after week to try to beat Rusev and take it away from him. I don't know how that potentially affects a feud down the road with John Cena. I can't see John Cena feuding with Rusev while he's the U.S. champion, but you never know. But anyway, I thought the match itself was actually quite good. If you have the network, obviously it's worth going back on demand and watching it, but there was no reason for the show to be that long. But the show-closing angle with Orton and the Authority, and really the whole storyline throughout the show and the way they built up to it, I thought was very, very, very well done. I was into it. I thought it was great. I thought the execution was awesome. I thought Orton and everybody else at the end was awesome. So kudos to them. Big thumbs up on that. And the other thing I have to praise them for, because it's not all bad. They do things the right way sometimes. One thing that they have done tremendously well, and I don't think they're getting enough credit for it, because we talk about this problem of overexposure. Seth Rollins is a guy who is also in jeopardy of being burned out for being overexposed. I mean, he is in multiple segments on every show. He wrestled twice on the show this week. If you go back, like, the last 3-4 months, 5 months maybe, you're going to see the same faces in the Raw main event over and over and over and over again. And Rollins, as well as Kane and Orton and Cena and Ambrose, they're all a part of that. So they have that issue with him that he's just on the show far too much. But that being said, they have done an incredible job of building Seth Rollins up as something and protecting him. You know, normally when somebody wins a Money in the Bank briefcase, the first thing they do is they get jobbed out. We saw that with Daniel Bryan. We saw that with Damian Sandow. We saw that with Dolph Ziggler and probably other guys I'm not even thinking of. You win that briefcase and, you know, maybe you'll cash in and win the championship at some point, but I guess because they have the briefcase, it's okay for them to lose. So they lose and they lose and they lose. That has not been the case with Seth Rollins. He has been protected at every stop. He beat Ambrose at SummerSlam. He beat Ambrose again at Hell in a Cell. Ambrose never did get that win over Rollins. And maybe they're going to save it for Mania or something. I don't know. But he got those big wins over Ambrose. He wins for the most part every single week on television. He's out there with the Authority standing shoulder to shoulder with top guys like Kane and Triple H, established main event guys. And that's how you get somebody like that over. That's how you establish Rollins as a believable accepted main eventer by having him surrounded by believable longtime main eventers. I mean, say what you want to about Kane, but, you know, Kane's been around since 1997. He's a top guy. Triple H, still looked at as a top guy. And there's Rollins out there every single week rubbing shoulders with these guys, and he's winning. So for all those people who love to peddle this argument that wins and losses don't matter, and I've had this debate with other people and other podcast hosts, and it's a crock of shit, and those people don't know what they're talking about, that wins and losses don't matter. I know it's not a priority to WWE, and I'm not talking like wins and losses in terms of like, I need to know exactly how many wins this guy has and exactly how many losses. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about perception. And when you lose and you lose and you lose, however many times, whatever the exact number of losses is, who cares? There is a perception that you are a loser. How many guys have fallen into that trap? You know, I mean, countless times we've seen this. But they haven't fallen into that trap with Rollins. You know, for the most part, the Shield as a unit has been protected a lot since they debuted on television. The Shield is, I mean, as a unit, forget about it. I mean, they are the best push group of guys I've seen in WWE in years and years and years. And that has extended to Rollins now as he's gotten this big singles push. And I think that's an awesome thing to see. Because I think a lot of people were probably worried about Rollins more than anybody else when the Shield split up. They all said, well, Reigns is the chosen one. So he's going to get a big push no matter what. And Ambrose is the crazy one, and he's going to get a big push as well. And Ambrose could be big as a babyface. I think he could be even bigger as a heel, which I'm sure is coming at some point down the road. What about Rollins? Is Rollins going to get lost in the shuffle? No. Rollins has not only not gotten lost in the shuffle, but he has been more pushed than any of the other two. And they've been consistent with it, and he is now a bona fide main eventer. He has cemented his position as a top-tier guy, and I don't know what the plans are long-term with Brock Lesnar, but whenever Lesnar drops the belt into whoever it is, I would think it's safe to say that when Rollins cashes in, he'll be the champion, and I could see Rollins getting a nice little run for himself with the title, as long as they have enough heel challengers to throw, or babyface, I should say, challengers to throw at him. You know, they're already kind of setting the stage for Reigns and Rollins when Reigns gets back from his injury. They could always go back to Cena and Rollins and have an extended feud. Orton and Rollins, they've got that ready-made when Orton comes back from his injury. So I've got to give them a lot of credit. I think they've done an incredible job, maybe a little too good because of the overexposure, but pushing Seth Rollins as a top guy, you know, he's been very fortunate because there's been a lot of guys before him who probably deserved it and got screwed just based on how they were pushed. And Rollins so far has not fallen into that trap, and it's been nice to see. By the way, the day after his match with Rusev, Sheamus went on Twitter and started using the hashtag #NeverTapOut. Because, again, he didn't tap out in the match. He passed out, and the referee called for the bell. I just saw that, and I actually tweeted it to him. I said, you would make a terrible MMA coach. That is a terrible piece of advice to give to a kid, to give to a fighter, if they're in a fight. Never, ever tap out. You know how many people had their arms snapped by Ronda Rousey because of that? Believe me, there are times when tapping is okay. Apparently, Sheamus didn't get the memo. So we have John Cena versus Ryback on Raw this Monday night. I'm a little worried for old Ryback. You put him in there, it's not like he's going to beat Cena, so you just hope they don't. He doesn't lose in such a way that kills whatever momentum he may have right now. I figure it ends up with him joining Team Cena at Survivor Series. Match probably goes to a no contest. Maybe the Authority runs in or something. Here's how I see Survivor Series shaping up right now as far as the two teams. Now that it looks at Orton's out of the equation, I figure Team Cena probably ends up being Cena, Ziggler, Big Show, Sheamus, and Ryback against Team Authority, led by Rollins, Kane, Rusev, Mark Henry, and that fifth spot is what's got me, you know, I could go either way on this. I could see Triple H, given that the stakes are so high, saying sometimes you got to do a job by yourself, and he suits up, and he's on Team Authority at Survivor Series. But you know what? If Hunter and Steph are that concerned about losing the match and losing power at Survivor Series, they should go to Paul Heyman and request that the WWE champion be on their team. But on a free show, there's no way they're going to do that. So Triple H may be the most likely. I'm not really sure who else you plug in there, unless there's just somebody I'm not thinking of. I don't think Batista's coming back. Not now, anyway. And even if he did, he'd probably be on the babyface side. He wasn't exactly thrilled with Triple H the last time we saw him on Raw. I'm just not sure who else you plug in there. So, but that's how I see the team shaping up right now. I think Team Cena is pretty much set, but that one last spot on Team Authority, that's the open question right now. Sami Zayn actually appeared on Main Event this week. They gave him a hype video and everything. He lost in a good match to Tyson Kidd, so if you don't usually watch Main Event, I usually don't catch it. Definitely go back on the network and check that out. Speaking of Zayn, he opened the show this week on NXT with another great match, this time against Tyler Breeze. These two guys have had, I believe, two matches before this. Breeze won both of them. They were also in the Fatal 4-Way at the last TakeOver special. These guys have great chemistry together. Unlike John Cena and Randy Orton, I would argue that Sami Zayn and Tyler Breeze have better chemistry than those two guys do. Zayn got the win with the Exploder in the corner, followed up by the Huluva kick, got the pin. I really love this match, and there was one spot where, and I love the story they told here, which is that Tyler Breeze had him scouted. I mean, to some degree, they both had the other scouted because they've had matches before, But Tyler knew what was coming up next, and they had all these reversals. And it ended up with Breeze absolutely destroying Zayn with a super kick. I mean, unbelievable, this super kick. The sound it made, the impact, it was perfect. It was so perfect. How is that not his finish? I mean, the spinning heel kick should be a setup move. That super kick should be his. And I know he's already taken other parts of the old Shawn Michaels character, I could tell, with his current character. You know what? Go all the way. Give him the super kick as his finish. I mean, it was just awesome. And it should have been for more than just a near fall. I mean, he should be winning matches with that move. But Zayn got the win on his road to redemption, which I pointed out to many of you last week. That's all we heard in that main event from Jason Albert over and over and over again. Road to redemption, road to redemption. And some of you picked up on that, and this week it was even worse. But that's the story going into the next TakeOver special. So we have not heard the last of Sami Zayn's road to redemption. Tyson Kidd beat Dash Wilder with the sharpshooter. Not a total squash either. It was a good competitive match. But in the end, Kidd got the win. Marcus Louis, we got a very weird backstage segment where he was staring in a mirror. He had a towel over his head. And he was basically doing his best Kane impersonation. This was Kane when the mask came off him in 03. And they put the towel on his head and he thought people were making fun of him. And he went on this rampage. He is basically doing the exact same gimmick. And it works because you know why? He looks like Mini Kane. Backstage, Sami Zayn told Renee Young he's ready for his title match with Adrian Neville. The time has come. He wants that match next week. And later on, Renee Young went and found William Regal in his office. And Regal approved the match. So right now, on this upcoming episode of NXT, it is scheduled to be Adrian Neville and Sami Zayn for the NXT Championship. Who knows if the match actually happens. If it does, I can't imagine it goes very long because they have to be building this up for the next NXT special. And so I don't have any expectations for a great match or anything like that this week. If the match even happens, I figure it's more of an angle than anything else. And maybe, I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll get the official heel turn for Adrian Neville. He's been teasing it now for a long time. So maybe that'll happen on the show this week. We had Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch against Charlotte and Bayley in women's tag team action. They are called women on this show, not divas, as it should be. And this was another good match. I mean, they put four women in the ring, and they actually came out of it having a really good match, and they gave it some time. I mean, who'd have thunk it, right? In the end, Sasha pinned Bayley. It is obvious that they're priming Sasha for the next title match with Charlotte, so that built to that quite well. Worth mentioning that on Twitter, Bayley sent a tweet to William Regal, the GM of NXT, saying, Mr. Regal, sir, I hate to bother you, but is there any way I can have a steel cage match with Sasha Banks or Becky Lynch? I would imagine that we'll probably build to a cage match at some point. I hope so. I think that would be awesome. I don't think we've had a cage match yet on NXT. I know we've had a ladder match with Neville and Bo Dallas, but not a cage match. So make it happen, Regal. Make it happen. And then we got the main event, which is really what this whole show is all about. We have been waiting for this now for weeks and weeks and weeks. And it was actually 6 weeks ago when they taped this. And stuff leaked online, and everybody knew, and we even saw the video, the Raw video. As it turned out, now, I don't want this to be a complaint, a whole giant complaint about this thing, because it was quite awesome. And they gave the people what they wanted. People wanted to see Prince Devitt make his WWE debut, and that's exactly what we got. And it was a kick-ass debut. They literally kicked ass in this segment. They just destroyed the Ascension. The Ascension came out. They cut a promo on Hideo Itami. They said, it ends right now. Get your ass out here. So Itami, who has made a bad habit out of running down for weeks on end now and getting his ass kicked 2-on-1 by these guys, he walks out onto stage. He had mentioned last week, this time I'm bringing a friend. Well, who's the friend? Turns out it was Prince Devitt going under his new name, and they pronounced it Finn Balor. So that's what I'm going to pronounce it as, Finn Balor. Comes out, his new name is up on the Tron, side by side with Itami on stage, and they make a beeline for the ring. They destroy the Ascension. They leave them laying. They play their music. They celebrate on the turnbuckles, and they go off the air. Wasn't a match. It was pretty much a straightforward ass-kicking. I have to say that Devitt looked great here. His music is awesome. I thought it just really fits the character. It's just really like a badass theme. I was disappointed in them editing out the Prince Devitt transition on the Tron. The way they did this was really cool, because I watched the video from, you know, when the angle was first shot, people in the building took video of it and put it online. And the way they did it was they actually put the name Prince Devitt on the screen, and the people went nuts. And I'm sure that's what they were going for. They wanted that big reaction, and then they could manufacture it and cut that part out and just make it seem like people were cheering for the guy just by walking out, when in reality, they saw the name Prince Devitt, and all the hardcore fans in the crowd went crazy. Now, we've seen other examples recently of WWE manipulating the crowd reaction. They did that last week on SmackDown, okay, with the yes chants that were meant for Daniel Bryan, and they made it sound like it was for the network, which is absolutely not the truth. And it's a shady, slimy thing for them to do. I get the sense that's kind of what we saw here, although not as slimy as what they did on SmackDown last week. But I really feel like they had no business cutting that part out. There was no reason to do that, because the way I look at it is this. When Kenta made his debut on NXT, they introduced him, they built him up in commercials and vignettes for weeks as international superstar Kenta. They didn't hide his name, they didn't shy away from it. And a lot of people thought, well, I wonder if that means he's actually going to be going by the name Kenta, and that turned out not to be the case. But even the night that he made his debut on NXT TakeOver, William Regal is in the ring introducing him as Kenta. And he comes out and he explains that now he has taken a new name in honor of his idols, or however he phrased it, people he looked up to, his mentor. And he announced that his name from now on would be Hideo Itami. And they put the name up on the screen, and people were like, oh, okay, all right. And they kind of accepted it. So they've already set a precedent for this. I don't understand why they would cut that whole part out. It really, I felt, added something in the footage I saw. It added something to the segment that was missing here. And I think that was a big mistake on their part. I really think they should have kept that part in. And given what they did with Kenta's introduction, there was no reason not to. I mean, the announcers kind of mentioned the fact that he was a big star elsewhere, but I felt like it was the opposite of what they did with Kenta. You know, they didn't mention the Devitt name at all, even though it was on the screen. They cut that part out. They really didn't do that good of a job of driving home what a big international star he is, just like Kenta was, and they mentioned that when he debuted. So that was missing from this segment. I thought that was a mistake, but it was still a great segment. I mean, come on. We've been waiting 6 weeks for this. And it was awesome. It was really cool to see the two of them kicking ass. It wasn't like an even-keeled back-and-forth brawl. They just beat the piss out of these two guys. And it looks like they're going to be positioned, at least initially, as a tag team, which I'm okay with. I think that's fine. Eventually, I'm sure they'll break apart. But just finally. And we've still got Kevin Steen's arrival to look forward to next month. It sounds like he'll be either at TakeOver making his debut, or he'll make his debut at the TV tapings the next night. So we are 1 month away from the official arrival of Steen in WWE. So they've got some talent stockpiled down there in Orlando. And since the network is free for the entire month of November, if you are one of those people who are signed up and taking advantage and don't know where to start, don't know what to watch, this was the perfect week to start watching NXT if you've never seen it before. And I think the future is pretty exciting right now. I'm very much looking forward to how these guys do, how they progress, how quickly they progress, and how quickly they can make it to the main roster, because we can use some of them right now on TV to freshen things up. Thank you guys for taking time out of your day to listen to The Sound Off. I get questions from people asking, how can I support the podcast? Well, the best way to support the show is simple. Just keep listening each and every week. Keep spreading the word about it to friends and family, and retweet or share links to the episodes on Twitter and Facebook. But beyond that, you can contribute by making a PayPal donation or by signing up for a free 30-day trial of the Audible.com service. Making a PayPal donation is simple. Just log on to thesolemonster.com and you'll see the PayPal donation box on the right-hand side of the page. Enter whatever amount you'd like and click the Make a Donation button. That's it. Or sign up for a free Audible trial by entering our custom URL, audibletrial.com/solemonster. From there, you can sign up free for 30 days, which helps us out. You get one free audiobook as part of your trial that you get to keep no matter what. And you can browse through their library of over 150,000 titles. Listen to your books at home, on the commute to work, at the gym, whenever, wherever. Sign up at audibletrial.com/solemonster or visit thesolemonster.com to make a donation right now. And thank you for supporting The Sound Off. We're going to talk TNA here first and then a little bit of Lucha Underground before we get to the mailbag. Another week, still no announcement of a new TV deal for TNA, which means two more first-run Impacts left to go. I think the last one is on November 19th. Spike is preempting Impact on Thanksgiving Day, so they won't even be on the air, or the day before maybe it is Thanksgiving. So they won't even be on the air that week, which doesn't matter since they've got no new material anyway. Kurt Angle came out, beginning of the show, bringing out the new champion, Bobby Roode. MVP Lashley and Kenny King made their way out shortly thereafter. MVP brought up the fact that Lashley stepped in for him when he went down with a knee injury earlier this year. It was supposed to be him getting a championship match, and so he wants the next title shot. Lashley was stunned by this because he's due to get his rematch for the title. Kurt Angle could kind of tell Lashley was upset by this, and so to stir the pot between them, he asked Bobby Roode if he would be willing to defend his title tonight against MVP, and Roode said yes. So the story here is that they're working to drive a wedge between MVP and Lashley, who is obviously going to go babyface soon. We had the Hardys beating Samoa Joe and Low Key to win the tag team tournament after Matt Hardy pinned Low Key with a moonsault. So next week, it is the Hardys against the Wolves for the tag team titles. This is a really good match, by the way. Backstage, James Storm gave Davey Richards 1 week to make up his mind on whether or not he would be joining the Revolution. We got a Sam Shaw and Brittany makeout session in the ring, which was interrupted by Gunner. They were really going at it, these two. Lucky SOB Sam Shaw is. Gunner called them both creepy bastards. I didn't know making out with a hot chick was creepy. If that's the case, then I must be the creepiest guy in the world. A brawl broke out. Brittany ended up on Gunner's back. And off the distraction, he got attacked by Sam Shaw. Brittany then produced the old black psycho gloves that Shaw was wearing when he was a heel. And he put Gunner out with his standing head and neck choke. We were then introduced by way of a video package to TNA's newest acquisition, who we were told was discovered by Kurt Angle on a tour of India. The guy's name is Mahabali Shera. He is 24 years old, big dude. Angle said that he could see him one day as world champion. In fact, he could see him as a world champion within a year. I'll bet you that doesn't happen. That's still a pretty big endorsement, though, coming from somebody like Kurt Angle. Tommy Dreamer and D-Von beat Bram and Magnus in a hardcore, what else would it be? Hardcore, of course, tag team match. Dreamer nailed Magnus with a cane shot, pinned him with a DDT. So Tommy Dreamer pinning Magnus clean in this tag team match. And just think, this guy was world champion earlier this year. You know, I watch this every week. They've been doing this stupid storyline. And I guess the idea is that I would think that in the end, the young guys, the new guys, are going to get one over on the old hardcore dinosaurs, as they called them. Didn't happen in this match. But I watch these guys, Bram and Magnus, together, and I see more potential in Bram as a world champion than I ever did Magnus. Magnus was always a good talker, but Bram's not bad either. And I just think as far as him in the ring and his whole character, you know, that guy, he's got a fire and an intensity about him that Magnus never had. So I look at them together and I say, boy, you know, Magnus was the one who had the belt for, what, 3 or 4 months? I could see Bram down the road probably being a better champion than Magnus was. Then we got probably the best segment on the entire show. Rockstar Spud came out for an interview with Jeremy Borash. People love Spud. He wears around a shirt now that says, "I'm with Spud." That's the thing they're trying to get over. In fact, JB, when the segment was over, or before EC3 came out, he even got on the mic and said, "I'm with Spud." And that would be a bad decision on his part in a few minutes. So anyway, Spud's out there, and he's talking about EC3, and he calls him a wanker, or he calls him a wanka. He's a wanka. I love that word. I don't even know why, I just do. So EC3 and Tyrus come out, and they bully both of them, and EC3 ends up slapping Jeremy Borash, which I don't remember Borash ever being involved in an angle where he would take bumps before, so that was kind of unique, I guess. Eric Young ended up coming out. He ran down with a steel chair to make the save, but the interplay back and forth with Spud and with EC3 was great. They were holding Spud at one point, and they wanted him to apologize, and Spud said, okay, I apologize. He goes, "I apologize for you being a big-nosed douchebag," and the people went nuts for it. I mean, Spud's just an easy guy in this role to cheer for, so at least initially, he'll be really over big time as a babyface. Unfortunately for him, that's not going to last too long, So when that kind of wears off, where's Spud going to be? I guess that would be my concern for him and his character, because no matter how much he gets over in this role, it's not like Spud's going to be wrestling for the world championship. You know what I mean? It's like he doesn't really have a lot of options unless they try to transition him, being that he's not going to be this comedy goof heel that people rag on all the time. Maybe you transition him into something serious in the X Division, try to get back to what the X Division used to be with the smaller guys who used to fly around. I mean, if you look at Spud's work on the indies, you could find it on YouTube. I mean, he was flying around all the time. So maybe that's where he ends up. I don't know. But right now, he's probably the hottest thing in the entire company. And I enjoyed this segment a lot, and I thought he was great. Havoc and Gail Kim for the Knockouts Championship. Havoc beat Gail to retain the title with a chokeslam. Easily the best match I've seen Havoc in since she arrived in TNA. And even some of the indie matches of hers I watched on YouTube. I have not been impressed up to this point with Havoc. I still don't think she's really anything special. But she hasn't really had any good matches since she's been on Impact, and she's the champ. You would think at some point she should probably have a good match. And Gail Kim helped carry her to a good match here. And in the end, you know, Gail had injured her shoulder previously. And in this match, there was a spot where Havoc had dragged her by the hair up the ramp onto the stage. And I mean, the height from the top of the stage to the floor is not, for example, like what it used to be back on Raw's War, when the stage was probably a good 10 feet up or 8 feet, whatever it was. You know, even now on Raw, the stage is really not that much higher. But there was some height to it. She threw Gail off. They sold it like her shoulder was injured again. And they started making the announcement that, based on the doctor's recommendation, this match is over. But Gail swiped the microphone away and said, "This match is continuing." And apparently that was enough for the doctors to be like, okay, and they let the match continue. So, shit doctors in TNA. I would not want to work in that unsafe work environment. So the match went on, and that's when it really got good, and Havoc kicked out of Eat Defeat at one point, and Gail kicked out of a few big moves, but in the end she got chokeslammed and pinned, so I like this. This was a good match. They have a backstage segment where MVP's about to go out for his title match, and he sees Bobby Lashley packing his bag. He's like, "What are you doing, dude? You're leaving? You're not going to be here for my title match?" And Lashley completely no-sold him, didn't say a word, just walked out. Main event was Bobby Roode and MVP for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. This, amazingly, was a very basic match. There was really not much to it. It was good, I guess, for what it was. I've seen much better. It was just an okay match. And Bobby Roode won clean with the Roode Bomb. Lashley then appeared from out of nowhere, and he speared Roode out of his boots. And then afterwards, MVP reached up for a hand for Lashley to help him to his feet, and Lashley just blew right past him and left. So they continue to build dissension with MVP and Lashley. Lashley still wants the championship back. He wants his rematch. So they've got some stories in place, but you can't help but watch Impact these days, and it just feels like a lame duck show, and it's really hard to get excited about anything. This was not a bad show. There was actually some really good stuff on here, but I don't know, man. It's just that feeling when you watch the show and you know you've only really got two more left, and then still no TV deal. There's still no word on where they're going to end up and what their future looks like. And a lot of people have left, and it's hard. It's hard to get overly excited about anything in TNA these days. Lucha Underground, episode number 2. I raved about the first episode last week. I was very impressed. I enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. I thought this week's show was good, too. I might have enjoyed the first episode more. In fact, I know I did. There was something at the end. It was a heavy angle they did, and I was not a big fan of it, and I'll get to why in a second. Show opened with a recap of last week's attack on Johnny Mundo and Prince Puma by the two unnamed Latino dudes and Big Zeke. Can't forget Big Zeke. They're going by the name the Crenshaw Crew. So now we're back for this show this week. These guys are in mid-ring cutting a promo. We learned that one of the Latino dudes is named Cortez Castro. The other one is named Cisco. They've got Big Zeke with them. Big Zeke is now Big Rick, the boss. Big Rick with a Y, by the way. His name is Ricklon. Johnny Mundo runs out to get revenge on them. Prince Puma comes out to help him, and we have ourselves a good old-fashioned brawl. Dario Cueto emerges from his office and does his best Teddy Long impression, turning it into a tag team match, playa, while Big Rick sits in the stairway. Now, if you've seen this temple, which is what they call the arena, it's like a run-down, dingy warehouse with, you know, a couple of hundred people, the ring in the middle. And they have a staircase that is kind of an aisleway. I mean, they have an actual entranceway, but they have a staircase that goes through the crowd, and some guys will come down through that staircase and come to the ring. So the match is between Mundo and Puma against Cortez and Cisco. Big Zeke takes a seat in the stands, in the staircase, and he's sitting there smoking a stogie. Like a boss, right? Like a boss. I like saying it that way. I don't even know why. Like a boss. B-A-U-S. That's how I say it. So it fits his name. That's his whole character. He's the boss. He's the boss. He's whatever you want to call him. That's what he is. And he's sitting there smoking his cigar. So they have a match. It was really good. It was the best match on the entire show. That yet again included Mundo and Puma. Mundo and Puma beat them with stereo 450 splashes onto the heels. Got the pin. Backstage, dramatic music in the background. We see Conan in the locker room with Prince Puma after the match, telling him that he cannot trust Mundo. Stay away from Johnny Mundo. He's bad news. In this business, you've got one friend, and that's me. So then we got another segment on that included the former Maxine of WWE fame, if you remember her from the NXT days, back when NXT was kind of a joke, really, on sci-fi. And she's talking about the debut tonight of her man, Mil Muertes, who Dario Cueto has brought into Lucha Underground to take out Blue Demon Jr., or as Matt Stryker pronounces it, Blue Demon. Maybe that's the right way of pronouncing it. I mean, I can't make fun of him for it. I don't know. I kind of laugh when he says it that way. You're pitching the show to an American audience. I think it's okay if you call him Blue Demon, but he calls him Blue Demon. So I guess that's his name. Chavo Guerrero and Sexy Star, intergender tag team match against the Son of Havoc from last week, and Ivelisse. It was good to see Ivelisse back on TV. You know, I remember when she popped up for the gut check on TNA, and she was really good. And I look back on that gut check in TNA. It's amazing. It's amazing they passed on her and they passed on Adam Pearce. You know, when it happened at the time, I thought, okay, maybe it's part of a storyline, especially the Adam Pearce thing, and maybe it's going somewhere and he actually is signed. No. He came. I thought he had a good performance and never signed him. And Ivelisse, same thing. I think didn't they end up going with Lady Tappa instead? Where's she at these days? That whole gut check thing was just a complete joke. I think the only remnants of gut check that's left is Sam Shaw. Ooh, thank you, TNA. So Sexy Star won for her team with a cradle on Son of Havoc. So poetic justice, she gets her revenge for him beating her with a fistful of tights last week. The main event, Blue Demon Jr. against Mil Muertes. Muertes is a big dude. That's all you have to know about him. He got the win with a flatliner. Tried to kill Demon when the match was over, but Chavo made the save with a chair. But he shocks the world by attacking Blue Demon with the chair. He then wipes out a bunch of referees. Chavo is just going crazy here. Sexy Star runs down to the ring. She's pleading with Chavo, spare Blue Demon. And the announcers made mention of the fact that I guess he was a mentor of hers when she was first coming up as a young lady. So she had an attachment to Blue Demon. Please, you know, stop hitting him with the chair. And Chavo blasts her with a chair shot to the head. You don't realize until you see a chair shot to the head now these days how much we've really been conditioned to not see them anymore. Because back in the day, that would have been common practice. But now it was actually a shocking act. But watching it, you know, it was just uncomfortable to see a guy. Like, I didn't have a problem with the intergender match they did last week, Son of Havoc and Sexy Star. I'm not really a fan of intergender matches because, to me, they're not believable. I don't care how tough this woman is. You put her in there with a guy, and it's just hard to suspend your disbelief. And maybe she's better than him, and she's even at his same size. Son of Havoc is not a big guy. Matt Cross is not that tall or anything. But if you're going to do that, she's got to go through other people on the roster. And at some point, it just becomes ridiculous if you have this woman wrestling the guys every single week. I'm not a fan of it, but I didn't mind it. Okay, some people just hated it. Some people were offended by it. I didn't really care. This bothered me in that it just, I don't know. It was uncomfortable seeing a guy hit a woman in the head with a chair. You know, it was a strong angle, but It's hard. Here's what I had a problem with. But besides that, that really wasn't what I mentioned earlier. The reason I wasn't a huge fan of this angle was because it's hard for me to get excited over a big Chavo Guerrero heel turn. I just don't care about Chavo Guerrero. I didn't care about him in WWE. I didn't care about him in TNA. I thought it was comical. When Chavo came to TNA, they practically gave this fucking guy a ticker tape parade. I respect him. He's a good wrestler. They tried to build him up, though, as though he was this great conquering star. He was this great big star from WWE that we've been able to snatch away from them. Now here he is in TNA. There are ways to get those guys over. You want to make them seem important. Chavo, it was so comical to see TNA try so hard to make him into being such a much bigger star than he really was. And so now here he is in Lucha Underground. And I guess he's got the Lucha background, and you got to have some names to get this thing off the ground. I have no problem with them using Chavo, but here he is at the end of the second episode, and he's the main focal point. They did this big heel turn. He's beating everybody up like he's fucking Brock Lesnar out there. I just don't care about Chavo Guerrero. You know, I just don't. And there's nothing they could do to make me care about him in that role. If he's a bit player, if he's in the background, if he's part of a faction, is like guy number four, that's fine. But the show ended, and it's like he was like the top heel. So I didn't think the show was as good as last week in terms of the in-ring action, save for the opening tag match, which was really good. Check that out if you can. The only thing better than Mundo and Puma wrestling one another is watching them team up together. The storytelling by the announcers and with the vignettes continues to be the real strong point of the show. It's only the second episode, but I've loved that aspect of it so far. You know, I wish that much care was taken with storytelling in other companies, and it just isn't, and it makes for a weaker show. So in that way, two episodes in, Lucha Underground already has a leg up on WWE and TNA. It's pretty impressive. Time for the mailbag. If you have questions for the Sound Off, you can email me, thesolemnmonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. I got this note from a listener in Australia who did not include his name, so I can't give him credit. He says, the WWE Network actually cost us about $11.80 a month with the exchange rate here. I know it's unavoidable and I'm hardly complaining, but I thought you might be interested to know that the $9.99 being rammed down our throats does not apply to us either. Marcus from Wittenberg, Germany. Right now, most of us assume that Brock Lesnar will lose his title at WrestleMania, but what comes after Mania for the Beast? Do you think there is still some value for WWE and Brock after he puts over the next big babyface? Or John Cena. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's my fear right now, that Cena is going to get the belt back at the Royal Rumble, and I hope to God I'm wrong. Let us hope. Do I think there's value in Brock for WWE? Absolutely. And I think the real value is in him as a babyface. I don't know when you pull the trigger, the time has to be right, but I think you get the most out of him as a heel, so maybe not right after Mania, but I think as a babyface, I mean, he would be huge. And the key there would be to get him for more than just three or four shows a year. I don't know how much more you could get him for. I guess the reality of the economics right now is that it's just not going to happen. Who even knows if he'll re-sign with WWE? I mean, there's a very distinct possibility that when his deal is up at WrestleMania, that's it. I hope not. I really do. I really do. I really hope they keep him around. I think you got to work out a situation with him where he can show up a little more often. There's just so many things you could do with him, and he's such a unique performer, and they've protected him so much. For him to just leave after running through everybody and ending the streak and beating Cena the way he did, and yes, they're fucking up his title run right now by not doing anything with him, by not featuring him in some kind of segments on TV on some weeks, but they protected this guy so much that to just let him walk, I think would be a big mistake. Now, you could argue that for his price tag, if they're paying him $5 million, which I've read that that was what the deal was for, is it worth it? Maybe with the economics of the current network model and them phasing out pay-per-views, maybe it isn't. Maybe they come to that realization that, you know what, as much as we want to keep this guy, it doesn't make any sense for us to keep this guy. I would keep this guy. I think there's a lot left you could do with him, and I think the real money is in the babyface turn. Tavon from Baltimore, what are your thoughts on a possible match between AJ Lee and Stephanie McMahon at WrestleMania next year? Imagine the storyline and promos that would come out of that feud, and there is no way in hell to do that feud without mentioning AJ's husband. What are your thoughts? Well, I mean, who says they have to? You know, who says they have to mention who her husband is? But, boy, if they did acknowledge that on television, would that not make... Now, again, I'm fantasy booking here. This will not happen. Let me make that very clear. This will not happen. But if they did a match, and they did bring that up on television, wouldn't it be a hell of an ending with Triple H sticking his nose into the match and sticking his nose into things at ringside, and out comes you-know-who to help his wife? I think the entire building would implode if that happened. Wouldn't that be something? I'm sure they would love to do it, too. I think WWE would do that in a heartbeat. Knowing them, they'd fuck the whole angle up. But that's not going to happen, unfortunately. Could you still do an AJ Stephanie McMahon match? Yes. And there are times when it's looked as though they were building to that. How many times? We've seen at least a couple of different times where AJ and Stephanie have come, I can't say face-to-face, they've come chest-to-face. And people seem to really be into it. You know, AJ doesn't back down, and they're staring a hole through each other. So that's a match I think that could be a draw on a show like WrestleMania. The last time we saw Stephanie wrestle was SummerSlam, and she won. Somebody like Stephanie should lose. So if she was going to wrestle again, AJ would be an appropriate opponent, and I would like to see Stephanie lose, because there's no reason for her to come back and wrestle matches and keep winning. She's not a full-time performer. But I do think there's some money in that match. Jake from San Francisco, do you think the Main Event Mafia helped ruin TNA in 2008? They were a super group of veterans that should have put over the younger talent. Instead, they won nearly every damn feud and made the TNA frontline look like jobbers at house shows. This was TNA's chance to prove their homegrown talent was superior to WWE's, but all they did with the Main Event Mafia was make WWE look superior. This is what killed TNA for me personally, and I lost a lot of respect for guys in the Main Event Mafia like Kurt Angle, because they proved they were there and just as bad at burying talent as what the Smarks accused certain WWE top stars of doing. It's shocking that an Angle based off the NWO, including old NWO guys, by the way, Kevin Nash, Scott Steiner, failed to put over any new talent and won most of their matches. What a shocking revelation that is. I mean, really, what did people expect? How many new up-and-coming guys were made by feuding with the NWO? DDP, maybe? I still remember that segment where DDP had the shirt and he did the diamond cutter and the place went. That's one of the all-time great Nitro segments. You could count DDP, I guess, although I'd hardly call him an up-and-coming star at that time. I mean, by no means was he young. But, you know, it helped him. Goldberg? Yeah, before they killed him. Who else? How many years was the NWO storyline in effect? How many guys were helped by feuding with or working with the NWO? Not many. So while it was a hot angle and it was the cool thing, and, you know, rah-rah, this is all great, and WCW's on top, what they should have been doing as the group began to disintegrate, and we saw the splinters in the NWO, and eventually they splintered off into, like, three different NWO factions, and then you had the LWO with the Latino guys, it was ridiculous. But they never bothered to take all of those guys on the undercard and say, okay, not all of these guys can be stars, but let's take two or three of these guys, whether it's a Benoit or a Jericho or whoever, and let's focus on those guys, come up with a battle plan, and let's start to elevate these guys. And they didn't do it. That's why they all left. And when those guys left, they were left with nothing except bad storylines and dwindling ratings, because the cool heels always got the win. They were cool. People wanted to cheer for them. They lost sometimes, but rarely. And everyone else, whether they won or lost, didn't matter. They were made to look like idiots. So as great as the NWO was for WCW, it was part of its undoing. Main Event Mafia was an offshoot of the NWO. And I'm not saying that every heel faction is a copy of the NWO. But just look at the Main Event Mafia. It's obvious it was an offshoot of what the NWO used to be. It had old NWO guys in the group. So I don't know why people are shocked that the Main Event Mafia storyline, you know, didn't exactly do wonders for the TNA frontline when they did that storyline in 2008. But that's not even the point. That's not even what killed TNA. What has killed TNA for so many years now is being WWE light. These past few months have been better, but it's too little too late. They started pushing new faces. They brought back the six-sided ring that had differentiated them from WWE back in the day, but it's too late. What's killed them are poor decisions by management and bad booking for far too long, all the Russo years. WWE, look, WWE can get through bad booking because they're so damn big, and they could always make money somewhere else if, let's say, ticket sales start to go down. Pay-per-views are not doing as well. Well, yeah, they're not going to do as well because they're launching a network. But they always had different areas where they can make money. It wasn't like, oh shit, if we start to stumble in terms of our creative and the people aren't buying into these feuds, we're not making new stars, we're dead. We're going to go bankrupt. This company's going to cease to exist. They've gotten so big that it's going to take a lot more than that to put WWE out of business. Unfortunately for TNA, they don't have that same luxury. Being number two does not afford you the same luxury. That's why you're number two. You need to work that much harder to convince people to pay money to watch your product and to come to your shows, which TNA has done a very poor job of doing. When you have 200 people at a TV taping, that's not good. And they've had, how many big names have they had? They've got the homegrown talent. That's for sure. They've had Bobby Roode, Austin Aries, and Samoa Joe, and they got the Wolves now, but they've also had other guys throughout the years that were very talented. Daniels and Kazarian were two other examples, right? They always had the homegrown talent, but they brought in countless big names over the years. They had Hogan and Flair, and they had Sting, and they had Foley, and they had Kurt Angle, and I forgot even to mention AJ Styles is another part of that homegrown talent they had. So they had all these different things, and yet they could never make it work. And that's not the talent's fault, that's TNA's fault. Like I said, being number two means you have to work that much harder and not make too many mistakes, and they've made far too many mistakes. And look, I hope they find a new TV home and they can somehow continue on. Fact is, they don't deserve any more chances because they've had 12 years to make it right, and they flopped. I've said it before, other wrestling promotions would kill to have 2 hours on a major cable station like TNA has had. And they've squandered it. They have no one to blame but themselves. They don't deserve a lifeline. They need to sink or swim on their own. And if they sink, well, you can't say they didn't have enough chances. The Main Event Mafia is one small part of TNA's history. I am not going to blame the Main Event Mafia for TNA's downfall or beginning the descent for TNA. It was part of it, but a very small part of it. Mohammed from Egypt was watching the Unforgiven pay-per-view from 2008 and watched the scramble match for the WWE Championship and was very entertained. I want to know why WWE never used this match again, and what is your opinion of the match? They didn't use it because it sucked. That's why. I never liked it. I thought it was a convoluted mess. And if you know what? If it was any good, they would have used it again. And they never did. So what does that tell you? You know, didn't they have three scramble matches on that pay-per-view? I think they had one for each title. What a mess. For those who aren't familiar with the concept, the match starts with two guys, like a Royal Rumble. And every few minutes, I think a new guy comes out. And if you score a pin, you're the champion. Brian Kendrick, Spanky, can say that he was once WWE champion. Only he wasn't because it didn't count. It only counts after all the guys are out there, and then whoever, I think, either gets the last pin or if time runs out, whoever has the most falls, that person is the champion. I think that I might have even botched the rules. It's not the easiest match in the world to know the rules to. I didn't like the thing I didn't like about it was the interim nonsense, where throughout the match, if you win via pinfall or submission, or you beat the champ, you are the interim champion. Even though it technically does not count as a title reign, then what's the fucking point of putting the belt on you? What are you the champion of exactly? I just thought that was so stupid. But I will give them credit for this. They tried something different. I cannot ever fault them for that. It just didn't work. And I'm glad you enjoyed it, but I didn't enjoy it. And a lot of other people didn't enjoy it, because if they did, it would have been a recurring thing like the Elimination Chamber and the Hell in a Cell matches. They would have had a pay-per-view. WWE Scramble. But they didn't. Because it just wasn't a good concept. This comes from David. Do you think if Raw and SmackDown were on the network instead of TV, they would still be able to maintain 3 to 4 million viewers per week? Because my thought is, if you can make more money without having to sell your soul every 4 to 5 years, the company's not willing to pay more for your services, then why not do it? Before costs, if 2 million subscribe to the network, they would be bringing in about $19,800,000 a month, and annually, around $198 million, which is more than their contract with NBC. And let me cut you off there. Not necessarily the case. These television contracts have clauses in them. I think they call them escalation clauses. And I think even in the most recent conference call, it came out that I think by the year 2018, they're going to be making $200-something million off their TV deal. I don't know if that's combined or just the NBC one. So I would just hesitate to say that. That's not necessarily the case. They may actually be getting more money from NBC. It may be more of like a backloaded contract. But anyway, David says, even if they ran commercials, just like they would on USA, I think it would draw more people to the network than how it is currently being sold. Or are the TV ratings that important? Also, do you think they could draw more people to the network if they ditched putting Raw on Hulu.com the next day and instead put it on the network? The thing with Hulu is they have an agreement with them. It's an existing agreement with Hulu, and so they have to honor that agreement. And to be honest with you, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that if they can have Raw in a place like Hulu, it's just another avenue, you know, to expose the product and get it out there. I don't really think that's going to stop enough people to make a difference from ordering the network. If they want the network, they're going to get the network. They're not going to not get the network because, oh, I can get Raw on Hulu, so I guess I don't need the network. You're going to have very few people who make that decision. To go back to your first question, could Raw and SmackDown combined bring in 3 to 4 million people a week on the network? No. No. I don't ever envision a scenario where that happens. I just don't. They can't even get to a million. And the network is now in 170 different countries around the world. They will not hit a million people when this year is over. I would have to think they will hit a million at some point next year. Maybe around Mania time, I would expect a lot of people to sign up WrestleMania month. But who cares if they sign up for Mania and then, you know, a majority of those people ditch the network the next month? What they need is consistent long-term growth, not growth in the month of April. They need to somehow hold on to those people. I just don't see it happening. This idea, though, that they could, by moving Raw and SmackDown to the network, so it's just not available anywhere else. You can't just put USA or Sci-Fi on. You have to buy the network. Some people will. And far more than a million, I would hope. You're not going to get 3 or 4 million people. There's just, you're asking a lot of people to say, you need to sign up for the network to watch Raw and SmackDown and then expect that the same amount of people watching your show now are going to do that. The network as it is now is not perfect, but in a lot of ways, it's a steal. And they still struggle to get people to pay $10 a month for all of that content, which is not even close to all the content that they could offer. They're holding back on a lot of that stuff. And you may argue that, well, because of that, that's why people aren't signing up. Yeah, that is why some people aren't signing up, but not most. So what is it? What is holding those people back from spending $10 a month on the network? I can't imagine that it's an issue of expense. I know for some people, maybe it is. For the majority of people, believe me, they could spare $10 a month. So why aren't they doing it? By just moving Raw and SmackDown to the network, that's not going to get 3 or 4 million people. That's comical. They will never, ever have 3 or 4 million people subscribe to their network. What will happen if they do that, it would be suicide. Because you're going to move your main shows off television onto your network that nobody buys. And again, not nobody, but not nearly the number of people they need to be buying the network to make it sustainable. And you're going to cannibalize your audience. I mean, that's what's going to end up happening. A lot of those people are just going to be like, all right, well, Raw's not on USA anymore. I guess I have to find something else to watch. Unless you are a hardcore, diehard fan. And they have a base of fans, and it is in the millions. But there's something about the act of these people actually going ahead and signing up for the network that's holding them back. And there's a lot of different answers as far as what that may be. I honestly don't think you're going to be able to get nearly that number of people to actually get up off their ass, which they don't even have to get up off their ass. I mean, they could just go on their phone and sign up for the network. I don't see them doing it. There's something about the actual act of going through with it and signing up that people are just either too lazy to do, or they will come to the realization that, you know what, I don't really need this show in my life. So I'm just not going to watch. It's not as easy as hitting the remote control and it's on. Well, then I'm not going to watch it. So I don't know what that magic number is that people, of the people that will watch it on the network and will sign up. It ain't going to be 3 or 4 million. I guarantee you it will not be 3 or 4 million. And the other reason it's suicide is you're going to take your shows off television. How do you ever expect to grow your base if the show is not on TV? And this goes for any wrestling company, by the way. I don't think any wrestling company can really make it big or even survive without television. If you're a small wrestling company that's regional and you do live shows, maybe some pay-per-views, you have a small roster, and you can make that work, then look, there's a lot of wrestling companies out there like that. But if you actually want to grow your product and, you know, not become WWE per se, but you want to be on the level of a TNA or a Ring of Honor or, like, look at what Lucha Underground is doing, you need television. You cannot take that and put it on some service that has very low subscriber rates and expect that people are going to flock to it and that your audience will somehow magically grow. Out of sight, out of mind. You take that product off TV, you're dead. You're dead. That's it. And so that would be the absolute worst thing that could happen. The whole reason that McMahon created the network, besides to make money off it, and I think he's made this comment before, what happened was the last contract they got before the most recent one, when they went back to USA, they had to crawl back to USA. It was embarrassing. And they didn't get the kind of deal they wanted to get. And it was very scary for them. And it was a realization that, hey, we may think the product is so hot and so strong, but guess what? Reality check, not the case. And they went to a lot of different networks, and nobody wanted to do business with them. So they ended up back on USA for a lower deal, not as good. And I think at that point, that's when Vince had made the call, we're going to launch our own network at some point. We're not going to allow this to happen again. If WWE, 5 years from now, finds itself in the position where NBC doesn't want to do business with them anymore, so they're off USA, and nobody else wants them. And I can't imagine that nobody else would want to pick them up. They have a big audience. But maybe, whatever, they don't want wrestling, it's, you know, there's a certain stigma attached to it, maybe the product is even less hot than it is now, and it's not even hot now. In 5 years from now, if they don't have a TV home, that's pretty fucking scary. And that's bad news for their future. The whole point was to get the network up and running, so if absolutely necessary, yes, we can move Raw and SmackDown to the network. At least it'll have some place to go. And that will work for them for a while. But the goal is to get back on television. You're always going to make more money off television. I never see them having the subscriber numbers they want to have in like the millions and millions. It's not going to happen. So where is the money coming from? The big money is in the TV contracts. You get rid of that, and you're dead in the water. Maybe not right away, but soon enough you will be. So those are the biggest reasons why. They still make more money off the TV deals that they have. That's number one. And number two, being off TV is out of sight, out of mind. For wrestling, it is. And you're not going to grow your audience by just having your shows on your own network. It's a very niche audience. This is not Netflix, no matter how many times they may want to compare themselves to Netflix and describe themselves. Yeah, they're the Netflix of wrestling, That's their audience. Random people looking for something to watch are not just going to start watching wrestling every single week. You have to be a wrestling fan to want to watch wrestling. It's a very niche audience. So it's not the same thing. You may be able to get numbers like that with another streaming service that has all sorts of content and all sorts of entertainment on it. Crackle. Look at something like Crackle. They've got comedies, they've got movies, they've got dramas. The WWE Network has one thing, wrestling. That's it. And so these are the things you have to keep in mind, and that's why that would be a horrible idea. Alex wants to know, which family do you think has the better legacy, the Harts or the Guerreros? I'm gonna say the Harts. And I'm counting all the people that they've helped train. So not just the family itself, but you said their legacy, right? Well, part of their legacy is the dungeon and all the people that went through the dungeon and have been trained by them, whether it's Brett or Bruce or Stu or whoever. And so that's a big part of it, too. So when you take that in mind with their actual place in wrestling and the success they had, Brett and Owen, I mean, maybe you can count Davey. I guess technically Bulldog would be part of that family and Anvil and all of them, but... I got to go with the Harts. The Harts, I think the training part of that equation really puts them over the top. I'm sure plenty of people have been trained by the Guerreros as well, but I got to go with the Harts. Simon Penny from Norfolk, England. When considering past tag teams looking back to the late 80s and early 90s, names such as the Legion of Doom, the Hart Foundation, Twin Towers, and Rockers get mentioned and debated at length. It seems to me that the Nasty Boys often get overlooked. Why is this? I'm not making comparisons based on technical ability. I'm purely looking at it in terms of teams that made an impact. With Jimmy Hart by their side, the Nasty Boys were certainly quite the team. Also, do you think they will one day make the WWE Hall of Fame? I don't think the Nasty Boys are talked about as much, probably because they were never really featured as prominently as the teams you mentioned. I mean, the Legion of Doom, back when they were the Road Warriors, I mean, they were huge. They were one of the biggest, I mean, literally, one of the biggest teams in wrestling. Hart Foundation, much bigger than the Nasty Boys, much more success. The Rockers get talked about a lot, I think, because they were kind of innovative. They were not the first, I mean, I don't want to call them a copy-off like the Rock and Roll Express, but they kind of were. But in WWE, I mean, there was certainly no young team like them at that time flying around, and then also they get mentioned because of what ended up happening. Shawn went on to become one of the biggest stars of all time. So that's why a lot of those teams, I think, get talked about. The Nasty Boys, it was two guys who went in there. They beat the hell out of people. They really, on their own, were not very good at all. Together, they weren't necessarily all that good either. They were brawlers. That was their style. They went in there and they brawled. And they shoved people's faces into their armpits, which is just vile and disgusting. But that was their role. And they were good at it. They were tag team champions in WWE. They were transitional champions. They won the belt at Mania. They lost them at SummerSlam to the LOD. And they never had any other gold or major success back when that shit actually mattered in WWE. WCW, they went back there. They had, I will say this, and you can find them on the network. They had some really big brawls with like Cactus Jack and Max Payne. And what was the other one? I just watched one of their matches not too long ago. Maybe it was with the Steiners. I mean, the thing about the Nasty Boys is they went in there and they beat the fuck out of you. And you could beat the hell out of them too. And it was actually kind of fun to watch some of their brawls. And so, in WCW, more so than WWE, they had some of those garbage matches. And it was brutal. I remember they hit Cactus Jack in the face with a shovel in one match. I wanted to like, I had almost had to turn it off. It was like, holy shit. I mean, how do they not kill the guy? So the line between working and actually going in there and just hurting people, you kind of walk that line with the Nasty Boys, and that kind of made it fun to watch them. So I was entertained by some of their matches. They were never really like a favorite team of mine, but that I would imagine is why they just don't get talked about as much, because in the grand scheme of things, they really weren't that big of a deal. Right? They were never top heels, but they were never top baby faces. And they had the tag titles for like a cup of coffee, but they never had a long run, multiple runs, all-time legendary team. Did they break up? What happened to one guy? What happened to the other? Nothing. You know, they did break up, and Knobbs had a singles career, but he was a mid-carder. So that's part of why I think they don't get talked about as much. As far as the Hall of Fame, it's a weird thing. There's no criteria for the Hall of Fame. Some of the guys they put in there and some of the celebrities that have no business being in there, how can you say the Nasty Boys don't deserve a spot? Do I think they're going to get inducted? I don't think so. I don't think the Nasty Boys do get inducted. Should they be? Sure. I really don't care either way. It's not like, I feel that the Nasty Boys should be in the Hall of Fame. Like, again, you can argue that, of course, they deserve a spot in there. How do they get left out, but a guy like Drew Carey, who didn't do dick for WWE, is in the Hall of Fame? Or a guy like a Nikolai Volkoff, or a Coco Beware, okay? All due respect to those guys. Would I put them in my Hall of Fame? No.
nor would I put the Nasty Boys. But once you start putting guys like that in there, I mean, the floodgates are open. I could think of much less deserving guys to be in there than Knobs and Sags. James Nicholson from Moore, Oklahoma, had a debate about kayfabe with a few of my friends recently that I thought would make an interesting question. They think it doesn't matter that outside of the shows, wrestlers break kayfabe openly and publicly, such as Stephanie saying that she plays a bad guy on TV in her Twitter bio, because kayfabe died in the 80s and shouldn't matter anymore, and also because actors in movies and TV shows don't do that, so what's the difference? Although I agree that kayfabe's been dead for years, I also think that it makes it more difficult for there to be a suspension of disbelief when Stephanie is cutting evil promos on babyfaces and then hugging less fortunate kids and standing up against bullying in video packages. I think wrestlers not exposing the business is different than actors playing characters, and it kind of bothers me sometimes to see it blatantly broken. Do you think kayfabe still exists? Should it exist? Or do you think it's important that it even matters in the present day? That's a complicated question. As a fan, I tend to like it better when they're not blatantly breaking it. I'm kind of with you. I'm in the middle on this. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal in 2014 just because times have changed, things are what they are, and it just makes it harder. And you know what? That goes for a lot of things, I think. Just in life, with social media and Twitter and Facebook and everything else, everything is instant. Everything is accessible. There's cameras everywhere. Everyone walks around with a camera in their pocket. You know how much shit we didn't know about back in the day when that stuff didn't exist? And I'm not just talking wrestling. I'm talking in general. General news stories and what was going on out there. People will make comments, because I've had discussions with my friends about this. There's so much horrible news in the news cycle. It's almost, you don't even want to pay attention to what's going on in the news because of it. All these stories of like parents that are abusing their children and burning them and torturing them and people cutting off other people's heads. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of really wicked shit going on that we never used to hear about, that never happened before. Here's the sad part. It did happen. I guarantee you it happened. It probably happened all the time. We just never heard about it because there was no way to know. Now there is. And so when you look at it from a wrestling perspective, it's a lot harder, I think, to keep kayfabe and protect the wrestling business the way that you did in the mid-80s. It's not impossible, but it's a lot harder than it used to be. So it is what it is. You accept it for what it is. But it does bother me when I see Nikki Bella and Brie Bella on the red carpet or making other random media appearances side by side, and they look like sisters, and you would never think there was anything wrong between them. There's no way. They're laughing together. They're cracking jokes. They're promoting Total Divas. That pisses me off. That kind of stuff does piss me off when it's that blatant and they throw it in. Like, you want to look away, but they grab you and they kind of jerk your face forward and they're like, no, you're going to watch. You're going to watch this, right? They're just throwing it in your face, and that pisses me off. So, yes, it does bother me, I guess, but I also just accept it for what it is, and I know that it can't be the way it used to be. And it's not going to kill the wrestling business. What's going to kill the wrestling business is a lot of things that are going to kill the wrestling business. I don't think the breaking of kayfabe is very high on that list. So I'm kind of in the middle on this, but I admit that, yes, it does bother me when I see that. Now, if I were running WWE, would I pull like a Bill Watts and force the babyfaces to travel only with babyfaces and heels only travel with heels, and I better not catch you guys together or you're going to be fired? Like, no, I wouldn't take it that far. But if, let's say, Dean Ambrose is in the middle of a feud with Seth Rollins, who stabbed him in the back 4 months ago, and these guys are road buddies, and they're traveling all over the place, and they're eating together in public, you know what? I might recommend that they don't do that. So I think it's just, you kind of take it on a case-by-case basis. The Bella stuff, though, yeah, for whatever reason, I mean, that bugs the shit out of me. I mean, I can almost ignore the fact that they still share a Twitter account, and you would ask yourself, if they hate each other so much, why wouldn't one sister by now have changed the password on the other? I don't even worry about that kind of nonsense. But when I see these media things and these interviews and they're together, and you would never think there were any issues between them, that does bother me. And I think that's a slap in the face. And finally, Kieran from Dundee, Scotland. I would like to know, what is a mark? I've heard this term used during shoot interviews, but don't know what it means. So here's the deal with this. It is a stupid term. It's a derogatory term, and I don't like using it. I rarely, if ever, use it on this show to describe somebody. And if I have, then it was a slip of the tongue. I think I've referred to myself as like a belt mark and stuff like that in the past, and I wish I would have come up with another word for it, but it's the only one I could think of at that time, so shame on me. It has a negative connotation. So if you think wrestling is real, you're considered a mark. If you have a favorite wrestler that you cheer for or that you tweet, you know, please follow me, you know, that kind of stuff, then you're considered a mark. If you buy a wrestling shirt or a title belt, you're a mark. If you get really into an angle for a match and you're all like, oh my God, that was the match of the year, 5 stars, you're a mark. If you take things too seriously at all, you're considered a mark. That's why some wrestlers will say another wrestler is a mark for himself. I've heard wrestlers say that about Bret Hart, for example. The funny thing about that is all wrestlers are marks. Some more so than the fans they insult with that term. For me, it's on the same level with the IWC, which is a term that doesn't even make sense anymore. Maybe it made sense when Prodigy was still a thing and when people still had to type keywords into AOL, but not anymore. Okay, the way I look at it, the I is no longer for internet. It stands for idiotic. And I'm sure as hell not part of that community, so I say thank you, but keep me out of it. If you want to email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com is the place to send any and all inquiries. And before we wrap things up here, it is the 7-year anniversary show. It's pretty incredible to think it was 7 years ago this week that I recorded my first of what would be now well over 350 shows. And it's been a fun run, and I thought it would be fun to go back and get away from wrestling just for a bit. There is a story that ran the week that I started my first show, and I remember this because I was blogging. I was doing some blogging at the time. I had like a personal blog, and anything that I saw that was funny or interesting, and it could be politics or it could be just general news, sports, whatever, wrestling, of course, I would tweet a link to the story or talk about it or whatever. And there was a story that caught my eye. It was a short story. It was put out on the AP. It was all over the place. In fact, if you do a Google search, you'll find a ton of these stories from 07 and 08 when this product first came out. And it was about an exploding piggy bank. And the whole point was that this exploding piggy bank would aim to scare Japanese people into saving their money. And I read this story, and it was hilarious. And I kept a copy of it, I saved it, and so I thought it would be funny really quickly, just to go back, and I'm going to read the story, it's only a few lines. This story ran the week that I did my very first Sound Off, episode number 1, back in November of 2007. This story here, the date on it is November 8, 2007. It says, Graying Japan has a new weapon to scare people into saving for their retirement, an exploding piggy bank. The savings bomb, which goes on sale in Japan this week, explodes and scatters coins if users fail to save for a long time, said the toy manufacturer. The battery-powered toy, designed as a cartoon-style ball-shaped black bomb with a skull and crossbones logo, lights up, makes a noise, shakes violently, and scatters coins all over the place if it is not topped up for a long time. And here's the money quote right here. Now, this is a direct quote from a representative of the toy company. And this is the line I remember the very first time I ever read this story, and this is the whole reason I saved it. I laughed my ass off when I read this quote. And it's just funny because normally when a toy company, they put out a press release about their new product, they talk about what a great product it is, and they usually don't denigrate their audience. This is what the quote said. It says, users must pick up and collect the scattered coins and reflect on their laziness. So if you were wondering, what's the point to all this? Why? What is the point of the thing scattering coins? I don't understand. How is that going to help people save money? Well, if you are one of these lazy pricks who's not saving their money, you now must reflect on the laziness as you pick these coins up from the floor, as you bend over and pick up each individual coin from the floor. They must reflect on their laziness. And the last line here says, Japan has the world's oldest population and one of the lowest birth rates, raising fears of a future demographic crisis with a smaller pool of workers financially supporting a growing number of elderly. the savings bomb. So I did a search. This was in 2007. I was wondering if this thing is even still being sold. I couldn't find anything. The only thing I found were a ton of stories like the one I just read from like 07, 08. Hey, maybe somebody out there can look into it. I would be very curious if this thing took off. Apparently it didn't. Is it still being sold? How can I get one? I would love to get... You know, I haven't even checked. I should check eBay or Amazon or something and see if I can get myself a savings bomb. But anyway, that's what was going on in the world in 2007. So there you go. If you can follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster is my handle. You can follow me on Facebook as well. Facebook.com/TheSolomonster is my profile page. We have a Facebook discussion group that you could apply to for membership. And you could also subscribe to us on YouTube, youtube.com/TheSolomonster. We just passed 10,000 subscribers this past week. That is huge. So thank you very much for the support. You can make a PayPal donation in support of this podcast. 7 years here. 7-year anniversary donation. TheSolomonster.com is the place to go for that. You'll see the donation box on the right-hand side. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. Of course, you can also support the show by signing up for a free trial of the Audible.com service using our URL, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You get free 30 days of service and one free audiobook that you get to keep no matter what. And you can buy a shirt in our Pro Wrestling Tees store, prowrestlingtees.com/Solomonster sounds off. We have 10 different designs up right now, all shapes and sizes, ships all over the world. PayPal, credit card, debit card is all accepted. So please browse through our store. I guarantee you'll find at least one shirt that you like. And that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Solomonster Sounds Off 7-year anniversary show. Thank you guys again so much for sticking with me all this time, especially the long-term die-hard Sound Off fans, all the the Solomaniacs, I think somebody dubbed that phrase 1 year. All you guys that have helped make this podcast as successful as it's been. It's grown tremendously over the years, continues to every single week, and I have you to thank for that. So let's keep it up. Keep spreading the good word about the show. We will be back next weekend for episode 354. And until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you again, and we will see you right back here for a brand new episode next weekend. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
Happy Lee, I had to sit in the stands and watch Granny break a wine bottle over another woman's ass. What a classy lady. And I loved how she went for the cheap pop by pleading with everybody,
"My mother was born in Brooklyn."
As if that's supposed to impress all of us. Guess what? It didn't. They got exactly the reaction they deserved. And the next morning on the Today Show, they talked about their experience. Happy Lee claimed that she was against appearing on the show in the first place. She had to be convinced to do it. This is all coming from a woman who once made an autistic kid cry on national television. There's a lot of dumb shit this woman has said over the years that should have earned her a lifetime ban from television. She's got no business being on TV. Why is she employed? Why does she have a job? The picture of class, Kathy Lee Gifford.
Solomonster sounds off. Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.